The regular October 2010 meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Will everyone please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all five board members are present, so we have a quorum, and welcome back, Director D'Amico. Good to see you.
Well, thank you. Can I take a moment?
Please do.
When we sit here and as a board, we do things and we make decisions for the municipality, for the community, and hopefully the right ones, and we get told when we don't. But I do want to say that make a thank you and a acknowledgement and commendation for our emergency services group. Had an operation down at French Hospital. Went well, thank goodness, because I'm here. And about a week after, I think it was 5 days and then about 7 days, I had two events, as they call them, and I needed ambulance service. So my wife called 911 in a panic, as usual, both of us. Three of us. My daughter came out to see me, and she got caught with two ambulance runs. And within, as fast I was able to walk, I was ambulatory, so I came downstairs. From the time she made the call, I got my pants and shirt on, walked downstairs. The fire truck pulled up, a wonderful fire department. They did a great job. And then immediately thereafter, on the first time, the ambulance came, our community health services. And both of them did wonderful job of handling the compassion for the family. My wife and daughter was one issue, and obviously mine, the medical people, both the fire department, I guess, do we call them EMTs? Or I forget, I think EMTs. And then naturally the ambulance, and then put me in the ambulance and did all the things they were supposed to do, and we got down there, and it worked out well. So I'd like to thank both agencies, both group of individuals, and that's what they really are, individuals. It was very good to see, too, is that, and I'm as guilty, I think, I'll take my own guilt, is that we think about everything as a job, but there are people who are made for a job, and these gentlemen and ladies are made to be public servants, for public responders for emergency services. And they did a great job in not only handling the event and the issues that needed to be done technically, but also handle the people, including my neighbors who came out and were wondering what was happening. So I want to thank both groups, especially for what they did for us then. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Director D'Amico. And again, it's good to have you back. And looks like you're in good shape now. Terrific. Okay. Report from closed session, counsel.
President Sanders, we discussed Lindsay versus CCSD. No action was taken.
Thank you. That takes us to special reports. This is our representative from the Sheriff's Department here today? Apparently not. Okay. There are no acknowledgments or presentations this morning, so we'll move to item 4, which is a review of the agenda. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Board members, staff? Hearing none, the agenda will stand as published. That takes us to the first public comment period, and I have several requests to speak. The first is from Ron Crummett. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. President.
No, good afternoon. I'm sorry.
Boy, me too.
So it's been a rough day. Going too fast.
That's right. And welcome back, Frank. We're glad that you're doing well. It's good to see you again. I'd like to briefly comment about the upcoming election and to try to point out that, as I'm sure all of us know, but this is a pivotal election. It is a tipping point election for many different things, but particularly for the future of alternative water supply for our Cambria. I remember 10 years ago we were in a similar position. We had a $10 million grant, and we had everything in place pretty much, and we were pretty set to go. And when then we had an election, and the election voted in some new board members that didn't feel the way that the previous board had voted, and we lost the $10 million, and we lost the chance for an alternative, permanent alternative water supply. At that time, we were limited to, this was in the late 1980s, to 25 gallons per person of water. We also had to take the necessity to use one of these in our toilet tanks to cut the volume down on the water supply. In those days, they were the 5-gallon flushers, per se, and you had 25 gallons per day. It didn't take long to lose everything that you had by taking a trip to the bathroom. So when you put two or three of these bricks in your water tank, and it would cut down the volume, and the flushing would not be as much. And it worked. Now, here we are again with another election coming up. We have two people that support the desal plant and two people who do not. I am hopeful that the people who have voted already have considered the parameters that we're dealing with, and those who have yet to vote will maybe remember the bricks that we had to use, and hopefully we'll never go back to that situation again. So thank you, Mr. President, for your time, and thank you again.
Thank you. The next request to speak is from Mihaela Mickey Burton.
Good afternoon, Board. Thank you for allowing me to speak. Actually, what I'm going to speak about is the resolution of $166,000 that your board voted on in September 18, 2009. But before I get to that, Mr. Crumpet stands up here every week and complains about not having enough water. He said he uses 13 units every 2 months for two people. I mean, he's swimming in water. Having a brick in your toilet is a small price to pay. I would put 50 bricks in my toilet if I could save one creek, one beach for the public. If I could get an alternative water supply that was sensible and wouldn't cost this community an arm and a leg, I would put 1 million bricks, Mr. Crumpet, in my toilet. In fact, you could leave that brick and I'll take it home with me. Anyway, getting back to what I am really here to speak about, the $166,000 that this board voted to loan, borrow from the LAIF funds, from our general fund, to pay the Army Corps of Engineers. Do you all remember that emergency meeting that we had to pay extra money for? I guess, Mr. Sanders, you collected over $5,000 in fees from this district. I guess that was one of the extra meetings that you got an extra $100 for. You don't have to answer that. You can write an ad in the paper and sign it.
Did I do something wrong?
Well, it seems like an awful lot of money. You seem to always be priding yourself on doing public service, that you're taking over $5,000 from this district. Anyway, I'd like to know, are you going to be paying back the money now to the general fund that we got the $3 million credit from the Army Corps of Engineers? That was a loan. We got the $3 million credit, and that's why we borrowed the money. So my question is, will you be paying it back to the general fund? Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. The next request to speak is from Ron Bates.
Mr. President and members of the board, my name is Ron Bates. I'm pleased to be a Cambria homeowner for over 5 years. I am here to offer thanks and encouragement to you for your continued efforts to bring a workable solution to Cambria's water shortage. I believe that you are on the right track and that the quiet, calm, and moderate citizens of Cambria have confidence that you are going to do the right thing for Cambria. I would also like to thank the board for a water department that responds quickly and courteously to questions and concerns. I especially want to thank your water department employee, Justin. I'm sorry, I didn't get his last name. And the supervisor who trained him for his efforts to resolve a small problem that I have. He was fast, friendly, and made me feel, instead of rather silly, he made me feel okay, and I really appreciated that. And I appreciate that you all have people like that working for you, and I appreciate his supervisor, who no doubt helped him to understand how to treat people. Okay. I will leave you with an aphorism. Last month I told you I'm a fan of aphorisms. And for those who don't know what an aphorism is, it's a concise statement of a principle or a terse formulation of a truth or sentiment. I particularly like the second definition. My favorite aphorist is Mason Cooley. And he says, pessimists fear becoming the dupes of hope. Optimists enjoy hope's company and consider being duped no great matter. I would like to say, please keep up your optimism. There are a lot of us out there who support you, and you're doing a great job. And thank you for this opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bates, and I particularly thank you for the kind comments about the staff. That's very, very kind of you. The next request to speak during the first public comment period is from Mike Broadhurst.
Good afternoon, members of the board. I'm Mike Broadhurst, and I manage Cambria's Farmers Market. Our market is very popular in the community. To provide an idea of what an asset it is, Cambria's Farmers Market ranks third in the county in gross revenues. Not bad for one of the county's smaller communities. We pay CCSD rent for the facilities we use, including the Betts Hall barbecue area. The Lynn's barbecue is one of the market's biggest attractions. The barbecue facility is also used by a number of other groups in the community. It was recently cited by the county's Department of Environmental Health, and the purpose of my speaking today is to request CCSD consider replacing the old facility with something that's suitable for purposes for the Lynn's and the other users. I know that this is a relatively small matter compared to the others you have to consider today, but if the barbecue area were red-tagged, it would become a big deal for the farmers market. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. While you're up at the podium, is there not something in the works to remedy the problem? Madam General Manager, would you like to chime in?
Yeah, we're working on it and finding if we have the money. And we'll come back to you with a recommendation probably on the 10th.
I know Director Clift is directly involved as well, so we're working on it, and we hope to get a solution that is satisfactory.
Wonderful. That'd be great if we could get something done in a timely manner. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Is there a prospect there'd be a $10,000 or more item?
That's what we're looking at about $10,000.
Okay. So what's the time frame on getting a resolution?
November 10th is the next meeting, so in the next meeting, 2 weeks.
Okay, and what's the status of the barbecue in the meantime?
It's okay to use. I mean, it's a safety issue, but Ben's dealt with the users who use it. So.
Okay, so at farmers markets between now and November the 10th, the barbecue can be used. Right? Okay, good. Okay. Stay tuned. We'll get it fixed. The next request to speak is from Tina Dickinson.
Good afternoon, Board. Thank you for listening to my comments this morning, or this afternoon, rather. I'm kind of responding to Mr. Crummett's comments. I didn't know that we were in campaign mode here at public comment, as we've been alluded to believe in the past. But since Mr. Crummett is making positive comments again for pro-desal, I have to say that I'm very much supporting candidates that are opposing desal or looking at alternate solutions. And I see that in New Times, President Sanders is quoted as saying, "We're currently investigating alternative water sources, and there has been no commitment to build a plant. But there are people who are running around with lighting their hair on fire." Well, I don't know who those people are that are lighting their hair on fire, Mr. Sanders, but I think we're looking at it reasonably, rationally, and fiscally responsibly. We're looking at the Van Skoyak letters for this past year have not looked promising. The geotech investigation does not look promising, even though we're not. When I go down to the park, and I understand they've hit bedrock at 24 feet, and I ask Army Corps people or I write to them, they tell me that I'm to come back to CCSD. I thought Army Corps was the lead agency in this project, but I've been told at every turn by every Army Corps rep that I'm to come back to CCSD. Now, I'm not getting any information from anybody. So while you are, I guess you believe you're making progress, I think that you are not making progress, nor is Army Corps. So the colonel comes out in December of 09, and here we are almost in December of 10, and where are we? Also, the feds aren't coming through with money. So we are not running around with lightning, as you put it, lightning our hair on fire, or at least I'm not, but I'm looking at something much more rational, more reasonable, and more fiscally responsible, because I think the town is getting sick and tired of hearing about desal, the costs, and what's involved. Please, if you say you're looking at alternative water sources, I'll be the first one to line up to hear about them, because it's about time. I think you need to look at a whole different source or sources and scrap this mess that's cost us. You're talking about $10,000 for something here. You could have paid for $10,000 many times over, and our infrastructure is crumbling. We need to get to what's important in this town. When you go to private meetings, to President Sanders, to unlock, and then you introduce two candidates to unlock, who are you really representing? Unlock or Cambrian residents who pay rates? Who are you representing? I really have to wonder. So those are my comments, and those are my concerns. Thank you.
Item 9A today, madam.
Thank you for your comments.
Item 9A today is alternative water sources. If you stay for it, we'll discuss
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, a year after the colonel was here almost, I will probably stay.
The colonel's
stay.
Not here today.
I know that.
Okay, we're not discussing the colonel. Thank you.
Before we move on, I have a request to speak here from Mary Webb, but there's no indication as to what she would like to speak on.
Public comment.
That's not the box that's checked. She can speak under public comment, but that's why there's confusion. Mary Webb, you submitted a request to speak.
Good afternoon, Board. I'm Mary Webb. I wanted to respond to some misstatements that were stated at the last CCSD meeting I was not attending, or actually it was August. I had said that we'd spent $15,000 to Firma, and as I left the podium, I realized Tammy Ruddick said that I said $50,000. I did not say $50,000. I said $15,000 was spent to Firma for comments that were never publicly aired at any meeting here in Cambria. So I wanted to make that clarification for the record. When I went to the Coastal Commission, I said approximately $20,000 was spent to Firma. I didn't have the total figures at that point because that meeting was held in July, and I knew it was going to be approximately $20,000. So I was off, yes, there, but I did not say $50,000. Tammy, so I'd like to, and any time that somebody wants to correct something that I say, I wish they would do it while I'm at the podium and not when I walk away, because when I walk away, that means that you're putting something on the record that's not true, and I don't think that's fair. Number two, I asked for public records requests that I finally got. It was about 25 days late. But I do thank Kathy for giving my fulfilling both of my public records requests. One was to ask for the number of water connections we currently have in Cambria, and that number is now 4,023, according to your records. And I would just like to note that since the 2001 building moratorium, where we were not supposed to be adding any connections other than what you call pipeline projects, we've actually added 136 water connections since 2001. And one thing I'd like to know is then does that mean that there are no pipeline projects left? And if we're in such a water emergency, why are we adding 136 water connections in the last 10 years? The other thing is if we have 4,023 water connections now and 689 on the water wait list, we are already over the 4,650 supposed cap on building. And so these numbers are being bantered around, repeated in the paper. It's obviously not true. We are not capped at 4,650. We are already, if you add the water wait list of 689 to 4,023, sorry, I was in a hurry coming down here today, 9, 10, 11, 12, 11, 7, 4,712. If that's wrong, Tammy, you can go ahead and correct me now.
Right now, do you want to be corrected?
Sure.
You're counting commercial hookups. The cap is on residential units. It's 4,650 residential units.
Well, you know, you should be really clear about that every time you use that number, because sometimes you say residential and sometimes you don't say residential, and the number is very unclear.
Well, I'm
so
sorry,
I would
Mary,
like to
it's
also...
In the, it's in the build-out reduction program. It's on,
actually,
the, it's
it
on the web, and it's very clear.
It changed, you change, the language changes
units.
In the build-out... Excuse me, I'm public commenting, I guess, you know...
Well, you asked if you wanted to be corrected, and I'm correcting you.
Oh, okay. Well, there's one number in the build-out reduction program in the 64-page version of it. There's another number in the build-out reduction program 10-page version of it, and there's another number in the build-out reduction question and answer section. And I would give you all those documents, Mr. Sanders, so that you can correct all of the times that you actually say residential connections versus total connections.
The numbers it's always
are
been residential.
It's very okay. The other item is that the last meeting, Peter Chaldicott said that the advisory ballot was sent out to something like 7,800 people in town, and it was more than 7,800. It was, according to the paper, the CCSD quoted a number closer to 7,900. And I'd just like you, for the record, to know that we only have 4,206 Cambria residents eligible to vote. So you sent out almost 3,600 or more ballots to people who were not eligible to vote here. So I call that, well, yeah, I think the how many of the 58% that you got back as a yes on your advisory ballot came from Cambria residents eligible to vote? Or is this similar to Merle Cliff's email list where he just sends it to unlock people and that they have a really high turnout of the number of yes ballots that they turned back in, and the rest of the Cambrians didn't really pay that much attention to it because it obviously wasn't a vote? Thank you.
Since you asked to be corrected, let me correct something else. Actually, two other things. First of all, there aren't 689 positions on the water wait list.
That's according to your website.
At last count, there's 665, I believe.
666 residential, single-family residential.
Oh, yes, but then there's also multifamily residential and commercial.
Secondly.
And the other thing is that sometimes you call vacation rentals commercial. In fact, you're talking now about changing vacation rentals to commercial. So these numbers are all being interchanged, and we need to get a picture of what the total numbers of all these are.
We're talking about changing
vacation rentals to commercial?
I didn't know that.
You have mentioned it in meetings in the past.
Okay.
It may not have been done yet.
We're not discussing it. The second thing is I think you've really mischaracterized the pipeline, as you call it. In 1999, the Coastal Commission issued a report that called attention to the coastal commissioners and others that Cambria has a severe water shortage problem. The Coastal Commission recommended that a moratorium be instituted, and the Coastal Commission also recommended that those projects that are in the pipeline be permitted to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
My recollection is that there were about 121 equivalent dwelling units of water in the pipeline. When the moratorium was declared, the moratorium was enacted with the understanding that, pursuant to the Coastal Commission recommendation, the 121 equivalent dwelling units in the pipeline would be allowed to proceed, and it has taken many years for those 121 equivalent dwelling units to come online.
Okay, actually, the Coastal Commission was not talking about equivalent dwelling units, Mr. Sanders. They were talking about water connections. And pipeline projects as of 2002 were 110. You've added 136.
Well,
so,
there are fractions of equivalent dwelling units in some of those numbers because some of those are commercial hookups which don't use a full equivalent dwelling unit.
Yeah, I understand how easy it is to trade these numbers, and that's why I really would like to get the entire community should really hammer out this water supposed shortage, how much water we have, how much water we really use, what's commercial, what's not commercial, what's an EDU. You know, you interchange these things in every single report that you have, and I have entire documentation, all the ways that they've been interchanged, and it's dishonest, frankly.
Thank you for your comment.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Ms. Webb, by the way, is your term supposed water shortage your words? Is that your opinion?
Well, I'm standing here.
Yes, that's my question. You said just now supposed water shortage.
It's pretty hard to tell what the water shortage really is, Mr. Chaldicott, when nobody can really hammer out these numbers. You can't define them. They change from year to year.
I think it's very simple. You just check the water levels and decide if you have water shortage.
The water levels look really pretty good, don't they?
At the moment,
in fact,
yes.
I could fill up a swimming pool in my backyard right now with no problem as long as I can afford it. Isn't that right, Mr. Chaldicott?
If we don't get it, yeah, you can certainly do that.
Yeah.
We need the money.
Isn't that amazing?
Just keep talking.
Yeah, I know you need the money. That's what it's all about.
Thank you very much for your comments. I have no more requests to speak during the first public comment period. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to address the board but did not submit a form? Seeing no one, we'll move on to the manager and board reports. Madam General Manager.
Okay, I just put in a reminder about next month's meeting being scheduled for Wednesday, November 10th at 12:30, and then the December meeting stay the same Monday, December 13th at 12:30. I attached Van Skoyek's federal advocacy report. I made mention of the holiday notice that our offices will be closed on November 11th for an observance of Veterans Day, and then the Thanksgiving holidays on November 25th and 26th. If there's any service interruptions or emergencies, our 24-hour answering service is available to customers at 927-6223. We'll meet next as the PROS Commission on Tuesday, December 7th at 5 p.m. That's a change time. This is the one time that they meet in the evening rather than in the morning. And then adding to this report, I'm letting you all know that the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, the Master Development Plan, I haven't reported on that in the recent days, and it is moving forward through San Luis Obispo County. It was the second part of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve EIR, and I just wanted to make sure you knew we're getting that thing through. David Foote of FIRMA has been working with the Post Commission and reporting to them, so I'll report at the next meeting any progress. Right now we're looking at probably the next 60 to 90 days. In the finance manager's report, the first quarterly report has been posted. It was done this morning for the expenditures of revenues for July 1st through September 30th. Al reports that there was one disbursement in excess of $100,000 during September, and that was a bond payment for $121,000. The LAIF balance is $3,893,122, and he notes that's a decrease of $375,000 from August, but then an increase from a year ago of $431,000. He did make mention that this is the time where we typically see a little dip in the LAIF balances, and that's mainly because this is the lowest period for property tax revenues or receipts. We've basically received our last revenue or property tax payment until December when they come in again. On page 7, under refinancing, Al reports that refinancing of the wastewater 1999B bonds has successfully completed, and that happened on September 23rd. And then he projects the total savings from that refinance at $216,084. He attaches his schedule of the long-term debt, and then he added on page 9 the projected savings from the refinancing of those wastewater bonds. The fire chief reports about the annual certified, the second annual surf rescue and inflatable rescue boat operations class that's put on by ANCOR and sponsored and trained by Captain Steve Bitto, and the fact that they all attended some comprehensive pipeline safety training in Santa Maria. We do want to mention, and I believe this has been released to the public, about the fire department regretfully being unable to sponsor the annual Halloween Haunted Forest this year. Budget cuts, unavailable staff, and we've got some staff absences as well. They did finish, too, the fire department, their fire inspection campaign focused on fire and life safety for hotels, motels, and lodges. Mark notes there were 22 inspections conducted, and they eliminated, through those inspections, 101 fire safety violations. And then this department participated in the burn prevention relay that came through on October 7th and raised funds for the Alyssa Ann Rooch Burn Foundation, including our own Cambria firefighters, who made a generous donation of $750 to sponsor a child to attend the camp. Mark reminds us to change the clock, change your battery on November 7th when we fall back to Pacific Standard Time. And his stats are there on page 12 for the fire department. Under the DCEL, that was it for manager's report.
Could I just ask
questions of the general manager?
Yeah. I noticed that there's no car seat installations listed. And I'm wondering if we need to get the publicity out, because that's a very important function the fire department does for young child safety. So on page 10.
I'm sorry, Peter, I see that.
Yeah.
This is, they do events. I know Mike Gallagher is the captain that usually heads that up, so they probably just haven't done their events yet to be able to note it on here.
Okay.
Any other questions for the general manager? Yes, Director Court.
Looking at the posting on the quarterly budget, I noticed the expenses for salaries and benefits was at considerably below the 25%. Is that simply a matter of timing of pay periods within this first quarter?
Exactly.
And it'll even out as a...
It usually does around mid-year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Director McKinnon, question?
Yeah. Question regarding Van Squeak. The change in the environmental infrastructure projects of going from 75% to 55% government share, are we not grandfathered at 75% from last month's meeting?
You know, it just depends. We have sent support letters to try to keep it at that level,
yeah.
But, you know, it'll depend when that legislation gets passed.
You had a comment to that effect, and
yeah.
I wasn't quite sure.
We sent letters to our legislators indicating that.
Also, I wanted to say that, you know, that Morris complaint on weed abatement, I thought the chief did just an excellent response, and it's certainly so contradictory to the Morris's letter, and it was very factual, and it actually gave them a recommendation as well. I thought that was great.
Thank you.
Final point. Tech Express, how come it's always charged to administrative department? Versus across the board?
Because we overhead allocate that out. It just depends. If we had to do a ticket for every department, it's just easier to allocate it out.
Convenience. And
yes,
okay.
It is.
And it's pretty much a constant.
You know, we're getting to a point now where we're working out the last of our IT issues next week as far as having a lot of staff time involved. But other than that, it's working out beautifully.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions of the general manager? Hearing none, we'll go on to yes, Director Cliff.
Under member reports, at the November 10th meeting, I wanted to let the audience know and the public know that we're going to have a special recognition for our two senior board members who will be retiring, and so I wanted to give the opportunity for people to show up. We'll have a reception near the first of the meeting, so that they don't have to stay for the whole meeting, but they can express their appreciation for the long service for both Directors Sanders and Directors Chalicon.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much, Director Clift. That takes us to, actually, we sort of glossed over item 6B. Madam General Manager and District Engineer, do you want to cover that?
Yeah, just briefly. I was just going to mention, because there was a comment made earlier about the contracts, the second presentation is on today that you all have requested, the two of the three segments, the supplemental long-term supplies alternatives that were considered. And then just for your information and to ensure that we confirm that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers did award contracts for the project level EIR, EIS with the Chambers Group, and the preliminary design with CDM, which is Camp Dresser McKee. So I know there was a question, maybe one or two, at a former meeting. And then I'm in the process now of getting a meeting scheduled with Directors D'Amico and McKinnon to meet and review the proposals that were sent in to us by the financial consultants. And Carrillo Engineers is unavailable to work with us, so we're going to be talking about a different engineering firm to do the consulting facilitation for that part of it. So I shot you both an email to see if you're available on a date, and just need to let me know if you are. Thanks.
Thank you. I think it's important to recognize that the two contracts let by the Corps of Engineers, first of all, are extremely important because it takes us a major step forward in terms of an alternative water supply. And secondly, there's not a dime of CCSD money in those two contracts. That was all done with ARRA, so-called stimulus funds. And I think our representative in Washington, D.C., Van Skoyek and Associates, had a lot to do with that. So there's a definite payoff in terms of a return to the district in value resulting from the Van Skoyek contract. Okay, that takes us to the consent calendar.
Could I just...
Yes, Director Chaldicott. No.
I had a request to speak on this very issue,
yes,
sir.
Yes, so did I.
We just indicated that we would take it up under item 9A.
Talking about, sir.
All right, come on.
And so does
mine. Okay.
I thank you very much, Sanders, as president of the board, for this opportunity, because I do have some questions about these contracts. The first contract is awarded to Chambers Group, and I'm glad you clarified that it was out of AAR funds and not out of any of the funds for which CCSD would be 25 or 50% responsible. But I have a question. When the Army Corps of Engineers awarded the Chambers Group the contract for $543,650 and a few cents, they awarded it for, quote, a project-level EIR EIS, end quote. May I ask, first question, what is the project that they are doing the EIR EIS on? That's my first question.
Well,
my second question, do you want an answer right now? Well, let me pose the second question,
sure,
because they are interdependent or matrix-related.
Okay.
The second contract that was awarded to CDM in Cambridge, Massachusetts, my old haunting ground, was awarded with no amount of money specified that I could find on the Internet anywhere. There's no record of any of this money in your agenda materials, or at least the public agenda materials. So there's no indication of how much money was awarded in a contract to CDM to do, quote, a preliminary design, end quote. Now, let's speculate. I have to, because I don't have the data. Let's speculate that the preliminary design is of a desal plant, and therefore that the award to the Chambers Group is to do an EIR EIS on a project level, which is, in fact, on that desal plant. My question, is there a CCSD design of a desal plant? Second question, in what sense is their design going to be preliminary? And the final question, when will CCSD have any response officially to contracts that have been made outside your purview now, as you just made very clear, because the Army Corps of Engineers is not using any of your money? They awarded the contracts. And so what's the preliminary design? What's the project level EIR, EIS? And will the Board of Directors of CCSD ever have any opportunity in its official capacity to respond to the preliminary design that the Army Corps of Engineers contracted out for, maybe on a desal plant, but I'm not sure about that.
What's your first question, Elizabeth?
My first question is, and you and I have gone over this in email and in public, sir, so this is no news to you. When the Army Corps of Engineers awards on stimulus money, not your money, a contract for, quote, a project-level EIR EIS, what's the project?
Well, as has been explained before, the process is as follows. The consultant working with the Corps of Engineers and the CCSD will define the project.
Yeah, that's my question. Yeah.
That's part of the process. You can look in the California administrative code, or you can look.
I'm not quarreling with you on that. I just want to know if they can define the project. Then my third question.
We will all define the project. We meaning the CCSD, the Corps of Engineers, with the help of the consultant.
At what stage do you intend then to exercise your authority and responsibility to review these two contracts' productions?
Well, we're not going to review the Corps' contracts. We're going to participate.
Not contracts. I said productions, sir.
Productions of what?
What the contracts produced. It's a production.
Well, when the consultant begins its work, the consultant will be working with the Corps and with the CCSD to produce the work product. And when that work product is finished, then in accordance with the California Environmental Quality Act and all of the regulations that have been promulgated thereunder, there will be public review, there will be public comment period, and eventually that document will come to be certified. And I assume that the CCSD will have a role in certification.
I would like then just to ask one more question, the same one and a different way to get it clarified in my mind.
Sure.
Are you telling me now, Mr. Director, that the CDM contract for preliminary design is prerequisite to the Chambers Group doing its work because the Chambers Group will be doing the EIR, EIS on whatever CDM comes up with?
I think it's just the reverse.
But how can they do an EIR, EIS on a project that hasn't been designed?
You define a project, and then you do the environmental analysis on the project, and then you go through the design process. Design is determining the circumference of the pipes and the precise location of where those pipes are going to go, and designing the building that would house the reverse osmosis plant.
So that's
and those
helpful,
kinds
sir.
Of
I'll interrupt you because I'm not quarreling with that at all. I'll interrupt you. If that's what the design is, namely the diameter of the pipes, et cetera, what kind of membrane, all that, and then the EIR, EIS is on the project, who defined, as you, that's your word if I heard you correctly, who defined the project and when that the Chambers Group is going to be doing the EIR, EIS on?
Well, as I explained, the Corps of Engineers, the CCSD, and the consultant will collaborate in the definition of the project.
Okay.
When the project is defined, then the Chambers Group can begin the process of assessing the environmental impacts associated with the project, and all of that information works its way into what I assume will be a combined document, an EIR and a federal EIS.
So the definition of the project is in the EIR, EIS document?
Yes, it has to be.
And so you're saying that you that none of this is under anything other than stimulus funds. So next month when you are going to give us the excellently
prepared...
That's what
prepared, I said, yeah.
Yes, okay. I will look forward next month to seeing how the design, the defining of the work is in the Chamber's contract because there's nothing about that on the website.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not being very articulate, and I think we're taking way too much time on this.
I grant thanks.
I'm pretty familiar with the California Administrative Code as it relates to environmental impact reports.
Professionally,
and the
you
federal,
should be.
Federal corollary. And
that's right. That's
they
right.
will follow the law in terms of coming to some verbiage that will be incorporated into the document that will define the project.
Well, And I hope that it answers the questions other board members have asked before. When does CCSD design its version of the plant? That's still the question. And if you cooperate with Army Corps, go for it. I tell you,
Director D'Amico, maybe you can answer better than I have.
I don't know. Well, I want to address two things, Elizabeth, Ms. Bettenhausen, is that the two groups you need, which is the design group, CDM, and Chambers, and I'm not familiar with them, but they'll do the EIR, it's an iterative process. Chambers knows what they're going to do. They're going to have a game plan of what they're going to do as an environmental impact, environmental studies that'll need to be done. As they meet, and there'll surely be coordination meetings between the Corps, I expect at CCSD, whether through us or, and that was one of the issues. We have heard the issue, I think, or at least I believe hearing the issue, and I wanted to make sure it was done. The reason we were talking at this point prior to Corallo and why I've said we need somebody, with all due respect to Mr. Bob Greshens, is we need somebody who has an oversight and advisory role to the board so that when these meetings and Bob reports back at what's happening, we can bring in a, quote, an expert, whether it be some one of the great firms that are around here. And that's one of the study things that both Alan and myself we're going to look at later after we do the bonding. But the point is the iterative process between the designer and the environmental people has to be done concurrently. Now, the people doing the EIR-ERS are not going to do much functional work until they start seeing a fleshed out project, meaning where does the pipeline go? Is the intake here? Is the intake there? Where is the siting? This is, I mean, you've done this historically, you've seen that done at San Simeon. So that has to be done. So they had to do both contracts at the same time.
Perhaps
I will give you the example. I will tell you, there's a community on the Central Coast that actually completed the design of a, I think it was $40, $45 million treatment plant. And then they started looking at all the environmental and found out they were in the floodplain. And they now have to spend another $12 million to fix the design and the construction because they didn't do that iterative process. And so, you know, those do go together. I'm not saying, and I wouldn't expect, and Bob will probably be the one watching what's going on, that the Chambers group is going to spend much time and effort until the CDM group gets further along. But as the point was, this is a, I used to call them preliminary design report or, you know, basis of design report that CDM is going to do. That's going to flesh out or at least incorporate much of what we had in our original plan of the plant. And if you look at the master plan, which talked about staging the plant, how big it's going to be, all that's going to be done. We will have that. We will get that. We will be party to it.
Mr. President,
the time it takes. But I do want to correct one thing. I don't want anybody to mistake something that you just said.
And vice versa, if I may, then, Mr. Director.
We must realize that all of this effort to have a desal plant constructed and operating is going to cost X number of millions of dollars. I'll leave that up to Bob as he addresses it. Now, where the cash comes from, the ARRA funds is paying for these things. But ultimately, once we get up to whether it be 75%, 55%, or some number I don't know, we are still on the hook for it.
That's right.
There will be additional funds required from us. It's just a matter of do you take your checkbook out now or do you take your checkbook out in 2013? And it goes to the same issue that was brought up with the $166,000 that we did send to the Corps. And that $166,000 was not needed or utilized because it's a Corps project and therefore we didn't have to do it. That's my understanding.
That's correct.
So what it is, well, if you stood on your head and screamed, they would give us a check, we put it back, and then in 2012 we'll give them the $166,000 plus a lot more better.
Yeah.
So the point is, I'm not, again, somebody's keeping the bookkeeping, I hope, expect, and sure, is that $166,000 will turn up, we'd have, what is this, the $3 million credit? Well, now we're going to have maybe $3,166,000. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the ultimate pot of money is going to be several millions of dollars, you know, whether it's 15 or 20, whatever the numbers are at that point. we're going to get 75 or 55, and then the municipality, you know, the community is going to have to decide whether we're going to go ahead and build this thing, and therefore we'll need some funding, which is the next thing which our director has mentioned, is that both Alan and I are reviewing. We got proposals from people who are knowledgeable in the bond field. How do you raise money? What do you do? How do you raise this kind of money? How does it interface with the 218 process? That's all going to be investigated and reported.
And if I may, Director D'Amico, respond, because that's what I was unclear about earlier, because you referred to having oversight on all this by experts who would know. And that's not what's being – that's not these two contracts.
No.
That's pending for the future.
That's correct.
And so these two contracts are having to do work – that is not site contingent, if I may sound like my academic self. I mean, we don't know what ACE is going to find. And so we're having a preliminary design done. We're starting on the EIR. We'll talk, I'm sure, more about that. I thank you very much, Mr. President, for giving me more than my usual 3 minutes.
Not a problem.
And I thank you also for our exciting exchange via email.
You bet. Thank you. I have another request to speak on this item from Mihaela Burton.
Thank you, directors. My question is about the need for hiring consultants and where the money is coming from. The consultants are an engineering firm and a financial firm. We pay an engineer $183,000 a year compensation package. Why are we hiring more engineers? We hired Bob Greshens in 2001 or 2000 for desalination. That's what he was hired for. So now we're saying that our district engineer is not competent enough to work with the Army Corps of Engineers. And basically we're saying that the Army Corps of Engineers, either we don't trust their design firm, of which, by the way, it's not free money. I am paying for the Army Corps of Engineers through whatever funds come here, through my taxes, whether they're gas taxes, street taxes, income taxes. It comes out of my pocketbook and everyone else's pocketbook. So it just seems like a waste of money. But where is the money coming from these consultants? Nobody mentions that. And the other thing is something that Elizabeth mentioned about the ARRA stimulus funds. She said that those funds don't require a copay, but it is my understanding that our authorization from Congress for $10.3 million is the only authorization we have, and any funds funneled through the Army Corps, whether they're ARRA funds or whether they're actually appropriations, are all subject to a cost share. Am I wrong?
Well, we have a $10.3 million authorization. The ARRA monies do, they're debited against the $10.3 million. So whether the money comes from ARRA or a standard appropriation of Congress, there will be a reduction in the authorization in the amount of the two contracts.
Right. So our
number
ten,
one.
So our three
number
million.
Number two. We have a $3 million credit. The ARRA money is subject to the same 75-25 match, but the CCSD won't have to come up with any money because our share will be debited against the $3 million credit.
Right. It's actually $3,166,000. Okay. Thank you.
We'll make sure that that accounting is taken care of. Thank you. Okay. Director Chaldicott.
Thank you. This morning in the Tribune is a letter from Mr. Jim Brownell. Is he here today?
No.
No? Okay. Anyway, Mr. Jim Brownell makes three statements which are incorrect, so I think I should correct them here. And the first is, will solar work? Well, solar will work. I have a friend living on the beach who has solar, and he's currently supplying electricity to PG&E, so it does work. The second thing he says, has any small community been successful in building and operating a desalination plant? His answer is, well, no. The answer is, I'm afraid, is yes. If he goes up to Marina, which is in Monterey Bay, there's a desalination plant which has been working since the early 90s. I think I went up there in 96. It was operating then. And it's a small plant, and it's a small district. And if he wants to see desalination even closer to home, he could go to Diablo Canyon, where a desalination plant is used to provide the cooling water for the nuclear plant, and that's been working for 20 years plus. So there's plenty locally. And then he says, has anyone said how much it will cost to build and operate? And he says, can't say. Well, if he came today, this is part of what we're going to deal with. So there's three items which he's made a mistake about. I wish he was at the meeting, because I think then he would get the facts before he committed himself to paper. Thank you.
Yes, there's also a new desal plant in Sand City on the Monterey Peninsula, and there's one that is going in Orange County, down at Doheny Beach, I believe.
And also, if he goes down to Point Hueneme, there's a research plant where they test three types of desalination.
That's right.
The regular desal, the same membrane as they use for kidney dialysis, mm-hmm. and one a micro membrane, and they were running three plants together. It was a federal project just to see which was most effective.
Yeah, but that's all done by the Navy, and the technology has improved considerably as a result of the experiments.
And we viewed these Navy. Plants, and they are not myths. They are in operation.
We've also heard that the desal plant in Morro Bay has been a failure, but in fact, desal plant in Morro Bay is operating right now. And it's operating by taking water from the wells that are contaminated on the east side of Highway 101, and it's being used to purify that water, mm-hmm. so that the people will be able to use their wells in the future. So it's actually the nitrate contamination to the east side of the Chorro Valley, I guess it's called, is being run through the desal plant, and it's being cleaned up. So the desal plant doesn't just desal. In fact, I saw a report up in the Bay Area, Walnut Creek area. They don't call it a desal plant there because it's not hooked to the ocean. They call it a demineralization plant. Right. It's a reverse osmosis demineralization plant that takes out contaminants from the water so that it can be used. So even we're not taking water directly, we're not proposing to take water directly from the ocean, but to take it from a well just like Morro Bay is doing right now to clean up their system. So there are effective running ones in the area.
And the point in Morro Bay is that the pipeline is not available 24/7. And so you have to have a backup. Yeah.
There have also been comments about Santa Barbara having shuttered its desal plant because it was a failure. Totally untrue. The reason that Santa Barbara shuttered its desal plant is because Santa Barbara found another source of water. And the cost to produce water at the Santa Barbara, according to the Santa Barbara officials, the cost to produce water at the Santa Barbara desalination plant is about on a par with what we pay to produce water here in Cambria from our groundwater sources. So lots of misinformation flying around, and people would be well-served to do a little fact-checking. Okay, I do have another request to speak on item 6B, Steve Figler.
Okay, fact-checking. Saltwater desalination, seawater desalination. You're trying to clean up water that has 30,000 parts per million total dissolved solids, as opposed to brackish or impure water that has, I think it's something around 1,000 or 1,500 parts per million. What is needed to desalinate seawater is a system that is powerful enough to push water 2,000 pounds per square inch to get it through the membranes. There are lots of successful brackish water desalination plants. There are hardly any successful saltwater desalination plants in the world, except in the Middle East, where the cost of power is zero, because the Emirates, the kings, the whatever over there, just use their oil. It's free.
Mr. Figler, you know, there are very, very few refineries in the Middle East. They produce a lot of crude oil, but they don't produce a lot of fuel that can be used for power plants. Please check your facts.
I have checked my facts. And The Economist is a very middle-of-the-road, even a conservative journal. And I'm getting my facts from them. I'm getting my facts from the Pacific Institute in Oakland. I'm getting my facts from several other areas. And these particular facts I got from a water engineer.
Well, let me give you a suggestion. Why don't you call the Santa Barbara officials who operate the desalination plant in Santa Barbara and ask them what they pay per acre foot when they fire up the plant. And then compare it to what we pay per acre foot for groundwater here, and see if the two numbers aren't relatively the same.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think if you'll speak to people from Santa Barbara, unless the officials are lying to them, the reason that they mothballed and then sold off the parts in Santa Barbara were because it was significantly more expensive than the alternative that they had. As far as Morro Bay, you pointed out that they were using desal there to clean up or polish contaminated wells. Well, that's not salt water. According to this water engineer, there's a potential 50 times increase in Cambria's water bills, which would drive many people out of their homes here. It certainly would not attract younger people.
Well, I think it's a gross disservice to use scare tactics like that. There is no board, not this one, not any future board, I am very confident, is going to opt for an alternative water source that is going to drive the cost of water up 50 times. It's
to happen. Actually, I felt that 50 times was probably too much. He was...
Then you should say that.
He was figuring that the electrical energy for these pumps would be approximately 70% fossil fuel.
Mr. Figler, as you well know, as a component of the desalination plant that has thus far been proposed, there is a solar energy component.
Yes, and I was about to address that. Mr. Chaldicott wants to correct Dr. Brownell. Dr. Brownell's concern about the efficacy of using solar power, when Mr. Chaldicott gives as an example a friend of his who lives near the ocean and sells power back to PG&E. We're not talking about home solar here. We're talking about pushing water that's 30,000 parts per million dissolved solids At 2,000 pounds per square inch.
Excuse me, where's the 2,000 pounds come from?
From the water engineer.
Well, yeah, that's twice what is the established
number. We're really using way too much time on this issue. Let's just leave it at this. We're a long way, a long, long way from having a desalination plant in Cambria. There's a lot of work that has to be done between now and the point when any kind of contract is let to build a desalination plant. And one of the reasons that we go through these iterative processes is to make sure along the way that we hit benchmarks that are reasonable for this community. We're going to learn a lot. And I just am very disappointed that you would stand up in front of this group on television and tell people that their water bills are going to go up 50 times. That is just not going to happen, Mr. Figler. I'm sorry.
Let me finish the point that I was interrupted from making. I felt that probably that was too much. So I went into your documents, and I went into some other documents, and they said that the fossil fuel cost of running a saltwater desalination plant is closer to 25 to 35% the energy to produce it is closer to 25 to 35% rather than 70% of the.
Well, how does that all translate into water rates?
Well, let me finish, please.
Well, we really have to move along, Mr. Figler. We've taken a lot of time here.
Yes.
How does that number translate into rates?
Okay. So I went to the Pacific Institute, and they said that the cost of water would only between double and increase fivefold.
Well, I dispute those numbers, but we're a long way from a desal plant. We'll learn a lot along the way, and we'll see what happens. Thank you for your comments.
I hate to say it.
Director D'Amico.
I need a half a minute. As far as, just to tell you, the city of Oxnard is now spending $55 million building a membrane treatment plant. It's actually going to, it's not treating seawater, I appreciate that, but it is treating the sewage coming from their sewage treatment plant. And it will then come to Title III water. And it's going to be used for irrigation and farm crops throughout the communities. And what I'm going to is that I wouldn't be allowing us to move in this process if I didn't believe technologically the plants will operate. See, the Pacific Institute, whoever he's talking to, they can argue what costs might be, what be. First thing you have to do is it going to work? Yes, it will. There are plants working with seawater, whether they're being run by us or by the Emirates of Saudi Arabia or wherever, all over the United States, Florida, actually Australia. So the technology is there. The technology is successful. It is improving, and I doubt that we're at the 2,000 PSI. I think the membranes are getting better for separation, and we'll be able to build a plant. It will operate. Now, we can argue about the efficacy and the cost-benefit of solar versus fossil fuel versus Diablo Canyon power. But the reality is that we are environmentally sensitive, and I recognize that. And I might not have gone to solar, but if people and the environmental sensitive people saying, why do we need fossil fuels? Why do we even want Diablo Canyon, nuclear fuel situations? So we're facing that. It will be a cost-benefit analysis done. These numbers will be put together on the capital cost. We will have an operating cost. We will end up with a budget will have a potential bond, and the entire community in a, through a 218 process is going to be able to say whether they want to do it or not. But the reality is that these are proven technologies that do operate, whether it's we have the right staff and whether you have to get more different types of people to run it, you're going to do that. There are people who are running these things up and down California, Florida. And I think that arguing over the issues, which we aren't probably even talking the same membranes, is doing disservice to the community and also to ourselves in the meeting and the progress that we're trying to make. That's what I'd like to just my comment.
Thank you.
Just 1 minute. I thought this was going to be a short meeting. But, you know, the energy is here. So one of the things that's important, there's a lot of people that would love to have this opportunity of an infinite source of water, whether it be salt water or any kind of water. There's over 24 communities in California that are in an overdraft condition. We hear from different sources. Rather than give us some time, you will be getting the facts. Thank you.
Thank you, Director McKinnon. I do have one more request to speak under item 6B from Bill Seavey.
Hello, I'm Bill Seavey at 1978 Londonderry Lane, and I've never addressed the board before, and I do appreciate the board's generosity in giving everybody here so much time on this issue. In fact, in reading the liner notes, I'm not even sure that I'm supposed to be speaking for more than 3 minutes or on this topic, but here I am. So
fire away.
Okay. I do not know any of the current members personally that are running for this board. I want to make that very clear. I do not know them personally. I do know Alan McKinnon personally. I supplied him with some information some months ago before he even became a board member about DSAL. Specifically from the Pacific Institute. So he and I'm sure other members of the board are aware of that. I did not have a position on DSAL in particular until very recently. I consider myself a conservationist. I consider myself an environmentalist. I'm also a business person. I think those things are not irreconcilable. I put on a demonstration at my home having to do with water catchment. Alan is familiar with this. It was an open demonstration which allowed, gave an example of how people could actually catch rainwater off their roofs. It's something that could be done. It's actually illegal in Colorado, which is nuts, but it can be done here, and I think it should be done. And I think that we can have something like a small-scale desal plant as well as tanks on our properties. It's not an either-or proposition. It never has been, never should be. And I'm really against the polarities that have occurred here, because this seems to be what's happening in our society today, where you've got one-armed camp on one side, one-armed camp on the other. And these things can be, compromises can be reached. And what you're saying here at the board is that this is a process that it may lead to a desal plant but may not lead to a desal plant. And I don't see why anybody should obstruct the process as long as, granted, that the amounts, the figures, the statistics, and so forth, are all public record. I see no reason for that. I have to admit that I'm coming out more in favor of the desal, and I came to this meeting partly to learn things. Even though I have been to a number of water meetings and I have read a lot on my own. But I think that this process has been going on for over 10 years, and I don't think that, as my grandfather might have once said, you don't want to change horses in midstream, because this stream has been running for a long, long time in one direction for the most part. So that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Clift.
Mr. Seavey, I think I also saw your letter relative to catchment and things, and I would ask you to make sure that before we if it comes to the lifting the moratorium, that before we lift that moratorium, we go to the county and make sure all new construction is equipped with some kinds of cisterns or systems to be able to facilitate the ideas that you have talked about.
I just want to say one more thing, and I'll get out of your hair. I also want to state that the people that are on the water wait list, these are people that made commitments to this community in good faith and felt that they were going to one day be able to build in this community. I'm not for rampant growth, but I am for reasonable growth and meeting the commitments to the people that are actually, that have actually, as I said, in good faith, committed to being here. Now, I don't know about all the other people that are out there that bought the lots. A lot of those lots that were not able to be developed, frankly, there's some real estate agents out there that led them down a primrose path as to whether they were ever going to be developed. And but at least the ones on the water wait list, they absolutely certainly should have an opportunity to build in this community. And we're not going to, you know, close the borders because of, I can't think of the word, but, I don't want to close the borders because not a statistic, but anybody can think of the word.
What package would be suitable for Cambria? That, number one. If you're talking reverse osmosis, Director D'Amico, that would be great, right? If we were not talking about saltwater desalination, RO, you could maybe change this plant into an RO plant, and I think you might have support from several factions of the community. But since we've totally eliminated all the other alternatives from discussion, we're not talking about RO. We're not talking about catchment. We're not talking about conservation. We're not talking about all the other alternatives because we've had sole focus for years on desalination to the exclusion of all these other water alternatives. And I think that has led us also into an emergency situation in Cambria, because if we do have a problem, we don't have any other choices in front of us. And I think that's mismanagement and a mistake, that we have eliminated all other alternatives. If we would have had a couple of other alternative projects, we might have had ARRA or stimulus funds right now being able to pay for off-stream storage or a couple of other water tanks or something else. But this board, in the past, and this staff has not presented us with any other alternatives other than desalination. So solar power is not guaranteed unless you fund it. And if you are not getting a bond or whatever for to include solar power, what some of the proposals have been is that you're just going to get enough for the desal plant and not enough to fund solar, and then turn around and tell the community that if they want solar, they're going to have to pay an extra $3 million for it. And of course, the community is not going to go ahead and vote themselves an increase, of rates to try to pay for solar.
Mary,
so solar will never be guaranteed unless you actually fund it. And finally, we need to vote. We totally need to vote. We have never voted. That is why the community is polarized. At least half the community is against desalination, and it's going to continue to be polarized unless you actually allow them to have a vote that is a valid vote. We are all paying right now. This is not just AA or ARRA funds. We are paying for staff salaries, 19 people making over $100,000 a year. We are paying right now for Tammy Ruddick to make $231,000 a year in total compensation to almost 100% of the time. And our engineer right now is working on desal to the exclusion of everything else.
Mary,
that's our money right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
We did have a workshop because I chaired it, so that's one correction.
One of three, and we never...
Okay, let's, please. Ms. Dickinson, please. You're not going to be yelling out from the audience. If you want to address the board, you can submit a request to speak on a future item here. Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. Before we have a motion on the consent calendar, I have a request to speak on item 7A from Jerry McKinnon.
That's a short-timer attitude if I ever saw one.
probably the most important presentation of the day, and he walks out. Well, that's the way it is. My name is Jerry McKinnon. I'm here as an interested citizen concerning the item in the expense accounts under facilities and resources. Of course, the dead horse I keep beating is that there be a page in the budget book just for this building. As it stands, I went through the section coded F&R, facilities and resources, and collected the number of dollars spent in the month of September. A total of $14,025 was spent in that budget page. Of the 14 and 25, 54% was spent on the ranch trail and repair of the vehicles and the maintenance of the vehicles that take care of the facilities such as that. 39%, or $5,488, was spent on the building and public restrooms. And 7% was spent on electronic support, $928. Now, my concern, of course, is the maintenance and upkeep of this building. And as Mr. Broadhurst suggested, we've got to do something with the barbecue pit outside. I'm looking at the repair work that was done on the building in the month of September, and $466 was spent on the building. You put that against the ranch trail, $2,350 was spent on the maintenance of the ranch trails. When we look at the maintenance and repair of the building and match that against the repair of the vehicles, $466 in repair and maintenance of the building, $5,257.
Board of Directors meeting September 23rd, 2010. 7C is to consider resolution 57-2010 authorizing a money market banking account at Rabobank. 7D, consider resolution 53-2010 approving a one-year lease extension with Cambria Village Square Shopping Center for the CCSD administrative offices for the period of November 1st, 2010 through October 31st, 2011. And 7E is to consider resolution 56-2010 ratifying a lift of the hiring freeze for the recruitment of the senior water operator.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as read. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
General Manager, item E there, where we're considering recruitment again, we've already tried this once. Is that correct?
We haven't done the – yes, we have. We have, and we got two candidates who had no did not have the required licensure. We received two applications for the senior water operator. For the senior wastewater operator position, we had one.
And I did hear that in the village that people were saying there are qualified people available within the district, but you've got to have the license to perform any of these functions.
We're under a permit that requires the proper licensure for our plants and our processes, so they've got until November 2nd to apply.
Yeah, if they have the appropriate license.
If they have a T3, which is a treatment 3 in water, and a D2, which stands for distribution 2, which means they can work in the water distribution systems. They've tested and taken the state test and successfully passed it and retained their license. And for the senior wastewater operator position, they have to have a grade 3. We have a grade 3 plant.
But we haven't in the past had too many applications.
No, the first go-around we got none. That's why we had to... First time. So the second time right now... the first time we got the one and the two, one for the senior wastewater app and then two, and the one for the senior wastewater app was not interested. And then the two for the water were not qualified. So we're back out again. And so far we've received one for the senior water app, and the last time I checked we had none for the... Let me get him backwards here. We've received one for the senior water op and none for the senior wastewater op.
Thank you.
Okay. Quick question. Yes. What if you don't get any? Is there a training, getting a junior or bringing up one of our other guys to a level?
We really need the licensure. Yes. Mike's retiring in March,
yes.
April. And then
so,
with water, we have to have it. We've got a bit of an exemption.
That's my point.
Yes, sir.
And if you continue not to get it.
We're going to spend some more money on advertisement and reach out to other areas. This time we went into the valley.
But there's no way of getting one of your junior operators at this stage.
No, they've got time. Time is a requirement also in wastewater, and for water, it's timing of the test, which they only offer twice a year.
Yeah.
So they're too late this year. So it's a need. We need to get it to comply with our license, our permits.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions on the consent agenda? Okay, that takes us to item 8. All right.
On 7C. On Tina Dickerson again. On 7C, consider resolution authorizing a money market banking account at Rabble Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Could someone elaborate on exactly what that's all about, how much money, how much interest you're going to be getting, the length of the time on the money market? Because I've been checking rates lately, so I'm just wondering what you guys are getting. Can someone tell me?
We haven't purchased this is to authorize the staff to invest some of the LAIF monies in money market funds
at
Rabobank.
Yes, I know.
We haven't invested it yet, so we don't know what rate is.
Right now, may I
yeah,
say that? All we're doing right now, President Sanders, is just opening, because we met with Director Shaldicott and McKinnon. All we're doing right now is opening an overflow account on the days that we have excess revenues and exceeding the $250,000 FDIC insured level at HOB. And right now, the committee has recommended that we just wait and see that the rates get higher before we do any investment. So there'll be just overflow account established at Rabobank.
Okay, General Manager, I just want to say this. I've been doing some investigation the last 2 weeks, and Heritage Oaks actually have the best rate, 1.86, but you've got to keep it in there for 3 years, and that's a guaranteed 1.86. But what, you know, Rabobank is like 0.5%. So I'm just throwing that out for whatever it may be worth, okay?
Thank you.
And just so you know, our HOB balances are $250,000, so we can't invest any more money in HOB.
Right. Thank
you. And that's the key.
Of $1,000.
Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 8A, which is a public hearing to adopt Ordinance 02-2010 of the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Services District amending CCSD Code.
The Ordinance 2010 was introduced last month, unanimously approved, and what this does with the adoption of this ordinance is it allows the CCSD to comply with the California Health and Safety Code and enforce that Resolution 50-2010, which is more stringent than the provisions provided in the 2010 California Fire Code, and this is going to be implemented, the California Fire Code 2010 edition, on January 1st, 2011. This Resolution 54-2010 that was considered and approved last month establishes and identifies more restrictive fire and life safety codes and standards than the state fire code, and it's necessary for the protection of human life, the environment and property of the residents and visitors to Cambria. The proposed amendments address critical fire sprinkler requirements and fire safety issues here. And we recommend the adoption of Ordinance 02-2010, and we once it's ratified, the Board of Supervisors has to consider it, or once it's approved, they have to consider it, and then once it's ratified by the Board of Supervisors, it will be forwarded to the California State Buildings and Standards Commission as required by law. And besides that one correction, there were no other changes from last month.
Thank you. Before the public hearing is open, are there any questions of the General Manager? Yes, Director D'Amico.
Well, the General Manager, or can I talk on the issues of the document here?
Okay. Sure. Whatever your pleasure.
Just one question, and not to be too picky, but has Council read this? Okay. First, there is inconsistency in the titles, the subject, the establishment. If you read, I guess, page 37, which starts the process to the board, public hearing right on the subject, adopting and amending the 2010 edition of the California Code and 2009 edition of International Wildlife Interface Code and the National Fire Protection Association. Then when we go to what our general manager just read, It reads, adoption of the California Code. The title mimics what you see there, but if you read what the thing says, is that the California Code took into account, when they created the code, the 2009 Industrial Fire Code. And I would suggest that, and I'm disappointed, I guess, as I mentioned to you personally, without the fire chief, we're making comments on something that can't be responded to. But the 2009 International Fire Code, here we're quoting the 2009 International Wildlife Interface Code. I believe they're two. I mean, I Googled them. They're two different codes. So are we, what we're saying in this document, first off, that I believe is right, be my interpretation, we don't believe that the state of California Fire Code is inadequate, and that what we're doing is we're going into the international codes, much like some of our other issues in the country, we're going into the international codes and bringing international codes to rule and to regulate our community, which I find a little questioning. If we want to adopt the California Code, which says in another statement which is made in here, that the references that the code people, when they did it, okay, if you look at page 45, here's the key thing, because this is actually the resolution. The fourth whereas, fourth line down. Fire Code Adoption Amendment, so that it adopts and amends the Fire Code, comma, which is based on the International Fire Code. So what, I don't mind that wording, because what we're doing is we're accepting the Fire Code, which has already looked at these other codes and included what they thought was best, which, you know, if we expect the state to be doing what they're doing, we hope they did the good job. Now, if our fire department has exceptions to the code, I would rather see the code exceptions, if we have the power to do that, to be listed in this ordinance, not to include an entire international fire code, because the state, if you look at, again, like I said, if you read the resolution, the public hearing to adopt the ordinance, this says amending and adopting one and that's not proper English. Either we're adopting three different codes, or adopting the fire code, which, as it says in the resolution, which is based on these. So that to me has got to be clarified, because I don't like to see historic documents waved at me 2 years from now saying, well, you allowed it because that was in the I guess what they call the backup documents. So that needs to be looked at. The other thing that I asked my fellow board members, and something that we talk about, on that first page, 37, says fiscal impact. And I didn't know that we were looking for more work, or we want to add more overhead and administrative chaos to our operations.
Under the current code, we've been a Board of Appeals.
Mm-hmm. Period.
And we've not had an appeal to us in, I can't remember how long, six years maybe? Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then I'll get to the issues that may bring in the appeals then. Okay.
Okay.
Page 47, which is the preamble number, I guess it's number 11, which then has, you should go from numbers to letters and letters to numbers, but number 11 and lists another 18 subsections. Subsection 4, which I believe is different from what we've existingly done.
Director D'Amico, yeah. What page are you on?
Page
42?
Oh, 42. 47.
Oh, I thought you said 47.
Oh, did I say 47?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right.
Everything's not clicking yet. All existing Group R buildings that are altered or remodeled. Now, I don't like that legally, because I don't know what that means. I don't want saying altered or remodeled, or all work on existing buildings that require a permit. Because, I mean, if I paint the inside of my house, somebody can say, oh, you're remodeling, aren't you? Yeah, my wife's putting up drapes.
No, but this contemplates specifically the addition of 1,000 square feet.
or more.
No, see, no. That's where I think it's my point. That's the prior one. That's up above. It talks about the thousand. Let's just read what it says.
Where are you?
Number four.
Number four.
Oh, number four. I'm sorry.
All right, we'll read number one. You're right. That's 1,000 square feet. That's all new buildings except Group R.
Correct.
But I want to get to the residential because we've got, 3,200 residentials, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood. If a building is $2,499 or larger, call it 2,500 square feet.
Right.
Okay. You make any remodels or alterations, which to me should be something that was permitted by the county, you now have to sprinkle it a house. So if I have my house, which is 2,500 square feet, and I want to change the windows and go to thermopanes, and I'm going to spend $10,000 with thermopane windows in my house, so I save electricity, I've now got to lay out probably $8,000 or $10,000 to sprinkle in my house.
That's correct.
That's the way that reads. It doesn't define it. What this says, any house larger than 2,500, you put this in, every time somebody changes a bathroom, changes a kitchen, redoes something or re-roofs the building, you're going to have to sprinkle it a house. Do you realize, I mean, I look at it, the main business left to our contractors in this municipality is renovations. If every renovation that somebody contemplates is going to be hit with a surtax, if you will, of sprinkling the house, you might as well just close up and go home if you're a contractor. Plus, you're a homeowner. I could see my wife after 10, 15 years saying, I want that kitchen done. And by the way, they've spent $20,000 on kitchens. We're going to add $10,000 to sprinkle the house.
Your point is well taken. Now that I read this in light of your perspective, it could be construed as a departure from the existing CCSD ordinance that triggers a sprinkler requirement.
Well, that one is still there. We can get to that one. But I guess where I'm going is that this has a lot. This is the full sprinklering code for the future. If you want to retrofit this community to have sprinklers, which is great, but I don't understand that we would impose. Plus, just the sentence structure of number four, counsel, is that under any of the following conditions, all of the following conditions, so that, now here's another one, number two, the second, again, somebody uses, you should use letters or something. The building is located on a roadway that does not meet the California Fire Code or the International Wild Land Urban Interface Code. He's got to sprinkle it out. So if our people go around and drive around, and there's a house, it's on top of Lodge Hill, it's about 100 feet from the end of a dirt road to begin with, they can walk up to him and say, it doesn't meet this our code. Sprinkle your house, please, and we'll be back in a month. Here's another one. Any house over $2,499, I guess it's, I don't know if it's cumulative or not. It all exists. If you actually look at them as independently, it says all existing Group R buildings that are altered or remodeled, appreciate that, and it's located in a fire, very high extreme fire risk, shall be sprinkled, right? Do you read it that way?
And you can always keep it arm's length. I wasn't here, but yeah. The fact is that you get no Board of Appeals because if a person's looked at this and he showed it to his lawyer, he's going to say, yeah, that's what it says. There's no sense in appealing it then because it says I've got to do it.
Well,
I'm saying, is this where we want to go?
Yeah.
And if not, I want to find out why it's not being enforced.
Yeah,
I know houses that are being renovated that are not adding sprinklers.
With respect to sprinklers, you may be right. I can tell you my recollection of the intention of this, and it was to capture homes where there's square footage that's added to a house. I believe the ordinance has been enforced in that fashion. So if you had a 1,000 square foot house and you added 1,500 square feet, then the sprinkler requirement would apply. But you've raised some interesting issues, Director D'Amico, and perhaps it would be
better to table it
until the next meeting.
Let me just jump in because we just went through a remodel. And it was exactly as Chairman said, for 1,000 square feet addition. But some of these are so onerous, I mean, even up to a shed, that would be the only one that would be disallowed, wouldn't have to put in sprinklers. So it's really a very difficult proposition. And the contractors, and I'm speaking to three within Cambria, feel that anything that you take out a permit for, you are now supposed to put in sprinklers. So there needs to be clarification. And without the chief here, there's a lot of perception out there that every home that does anything to it is going to require sprinkling the home. And for that, if it wasn't just monetary, it is a good thing. I'm glad that we have, in fact, done it, but it can be quite expensive.
Perhaps the best thing to do is to table this until we can have the chief here, and between now and then, we may want to have our council draft some alternative language that gets at what was originally intended several years ago, which is to trigger a sprinkler requirement when there's square footage that is added that takes a house up beyond a certain threshold in terms of square footage.
With council, I mean, I don't know what sort of an acceptable process under the Brown Act and all of that. I mean, I've had the time because I'm home, and I've gone through this. And
that's pretty obvious.
Googling the different right. international codes, because, by the way, that was the other thing. Number 16, 17, and 18, we got the fire service. By the way, there's another one in there, by the way. Every forced air unit in attics and anywhere else that has a gas, well, mine's gas, should have a sprinkler on. And if
I so, got it.
Couple of things. First, I hope you don't sink often. Second, getting into the substantive stuff really does require the chief here.
Yeah,
it does. These were not written by me. These were tweaked by me. But these are good questions. The thing that we should note is there is a timing element associated with this. The amendment process has to happen rather expeditiously.
This happened when Putney was here several years ago. And one of my point is that these are done every 3 years.
Right.
Why is it we got 3 months left and it becomes an emergency to do it? All due respect to the chief and to what needs to be done, but we got to. Because he used to do it with the liens for the cleanups. We did them at such a time that we had to get it in, and therefore the board made decisions. I don't know if anybody ever had the time or willingness to correct it because, oh, my God, we're running up against a deadline. All I'm saying is I would like to, I'll take the obligation to put notes together referencing the sections so that if you could raise it with and if he wants to meet, I would be glad to meet with him.
Well,
I don't know if we can get one other.
Director D'Amico, let's maybe give our council specific instructions, and he can sit down with the fire chief and work them out. Again, going back several years when the concept of requiring sprinkling when there was a remodel first came up, there was an ordinance adopted that was subsequently amended, and the subsequent amendment involves requiring sprinkling only when there's an addition of square footage, and the total square footage when the remodel is completed is at 2,500 mm-hmm. or greater. So perhaps what we can do is
single two or three sprinklers for every forced air unit in the community. To me, it sounds good, but the appendix relates a lot, and we do this with the water thing too. Is we're in a community that has a potential wildfire issue, and somebody said that it was either a newspaper article or not. I have never argued that desal was tied to a wildfire. The desal is to give us drinking water for our residential use, our commercial use, fire hydrants for structure fires, which is our responsibility, or at least through our. We're here for structure fires. If there's a God forbid, if there's a wildfire, CAL FIRE comes in, they bring in the tankers, they take control, which is, I think, the right thing. If we had a fire and you tried to, well, Oakland had it. They had water mains. They had hydrants. They couldn't, you don't fight it with a residential, essentially a water system. Right. So the water system is one issue. Fire safety is the other. Our chief is expert at both. So he may have issues here. But, and this happened when Putney was here, the idea of a fire sprinkler in the house somehow mitigating, now naturally, you want the structure fires to be out as quickly as possible. Otherwise, they are the cause. And Metz is, I think that's a big issue, and he talks about that. But then again, do you start retrofitting all the houses? That's a big question.
You've obviously done your homework.
And I kept my house under 2,500 when I expanded it.
there's certainly nothing that prevents you from meeting with the fire chief between now and the next couple of weeks before the next board meeting. So any of these issues can be worked out with the fire chief and our general counsel.
Didn't counsel,
pretty simple,
counsel just say that altered or remodeled may well be defined?
Yes.
Which case is our questions may be muted.
Could be. But I think as Director D'Amico points out, it would be good to have that information in front of the board.
Just because it's defined doesn't mean it's acceptable.
Right.
If definition says, even taking out and redoing bathrooms and kitchens and whatever, do you really want to re-sprinkler a house? Causing them having to do that because of that? I guess that's the question. Get the information.
And again, I think we've got language here that may not be consistent with what was intended and the manner in which the ordinance has been enforced. So is that acceptable to you, process that I just laid out?
I'm not trying to miss the deadline. I mean, get it done.
We'll make
whatever comes out, we can vote on it.
We'll make it. Okay. We did advertise this as a public hearing, and I do have one request to speak. So I'm going to open the public hearing and invite Amanda Rice up to speak in case you can't be here on November the 10th.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. I appreciate that consideration. I read through this and talked to the fire chief this week about it, and because I had some concerns about the appendix related to the reasons underlying it, I'd like to first say that I completely 100% support the reasons why Chief Miller believes that sprinklering every house in Cambria is a good thing. If you look in the supporting document, the appendix, right near the end, it says that the CCSD fire department's emergency response varies. Most fire departments consider two engine companies, a rescue unit, an EMS unit or ambulance, and a chief officer to be the minimum emergency response assignment for a single family structure fire. Well, we don't have that here. Which is until we have the mutual aid agreement with CAL FIRE, which they bring on the extra equipment and personnel that are needed. The sprinklers are meant to slow down and hopefully limit any potential for the fire spreading beyond a structure and causing what, heaven forbid, would be a horrible thing, which is the forest catches fire. That said, there are a lot of reasons why that's true. They're not just we're not quite fully staffed and equipped, but the roads are dangerously narrow and curvy in some places, and the terrain is dangerous. But I would like to, especially since you've tabled it, on page 48, it says a couple of things that I think should probably be considered to revise. It says Cambria does not have the, I'm sorry, I don't have a copy in front of me or I would tell you exactly where on the page it is, but it's page 48. Currently Cambria does not have the minimum storage capacity, is that water use is not necessarily coupled with growth of population. In fact, in the last 20 years, the per capita water in this state has stayed the same or gone down.
Despite population growth.
So that I think that it might be a good idea to consider changing those things. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I have another request to speak during the public hearing from Jim Crescenzi.
I live at 640 HP, and it was comments by Director D'Amico that caused me to ask to speak. I just wanted you to know that this 2,500 square foot limit and the extra cost of the sprinkler system is something affecting personal decisions on people considering remodeling. It is not an insignificant cost to take an existing structure and to put in the sprinklers. My wife and I were considering it as an option, an addition that would, because the issue is an elevator, anticipating limited mobility in the future as we're getting older. And the total cost, I don't remember the exact numbers, but this is a significant consideration, the impact to the sprinklers if you trigger over the 2,500 square feet. And it seems to me that although it may be well-intentioned, rather than doing the entire structure, maybe just requiring that there be a sprinkler in the kitchen area or in the areas likely to have a fire, rather than do the whole bloody structure, it seems like a good idea that had unintended consequences.
Thank you. I have a request to speak from Valerie Bentz. It says 8 or 9A. Did you want to speak on the fire ordinance or on 9A?
I wanted to speak on the alternative
water. Okay, that's 9A. Okay, thank you. All right, with that, I have no other request to speak on this item. I'm going to close the public hearing, subject to the public hearing being reopened when this comes back on November the 10th, and we'll reconsider or we'll consider perhaps an amended version of the ordinance at that time. Mr. Counsel?
Just a couple things to note.
Sure.
You should continue this to a date certain, and whether you close the public hearing now and choose to reopen it, then that's up to you.
Uh-huh.
If we do make any modifications to the ordinance, we'll have to start the process over again, which means reintroducing mm-hmm. it. Which I'm just pointing this out. It's whatever the board chooses, that's what we'll do. We'll have to start that process over again, which will mean an initial introduction, then another public hearing at the time we adopt, based on whatever changes you make to it. That's the process that's involved in adopting uniform codes.
Understood.
So I just wanted to make sure we knew that and to encourage you, the board, to continue this to a date certain in case there aren't modifications made.
Okay.
Is there a time, if we make a change at the November 10th meeting, is there, it has to sit for 30 days or something before the next?
Yep.
So you got a December 13th meeting.
We would have to literally start the entire process over, reintroduce the ordinance with the modifications, then have the public hearing at the adoption ordinance, and then adopt it. So it will require essentially another 2 months. What I would recommend also, and I think that's what we're going to do, is that the chief meet with Board Member D'Amico and try to resolve concerns. If they can't be resolved, then we'll have to tweak the ordinance and start the process over again.
What's the difference between tweak and change?
There isn't.
So, but my point, are you saying that
if there are
changes to the ordinance itself, the process has to restart?
That's correct.
Correct. And the ordinance is which part of this 20-something pages?
Starts at page 39.
Huh?
It starts on page 39 and continues.
Okay.
Director D'Amico.
Well, he's not going to be happy.
That's okay.
Huh?
It's okay. Main thing is to get it right.
I think so, but what's going to happen, I'm not speaking, but you're the one with the timetable, because even if we all came to whatever the best agreement would be in November meeting, you'd say, okay, that opens the new ordinance discussion, which means a December meeting to accept it. My understanding, it's got to go to San Luis Obispo.
Well,
and it would never they would never get a chance, so therefore it never gets to the state before the end of the year. This whole thing is to try to get something to the state to get us different than what we are and just saying, we actually even, yeah.
That's all accurate. We still have an opportunity to amend the California Fire Code. You have 180 days after adoption to amend it, but you're going to have some dissonance. You're going to have a period during which you're enforcing a different code.
A short break. We will recess for 10 minutes. Couple of discussions with the superintendent of the Coast Unified School District, Chris Adams. And by way of background, both Superintendent Adams and I grew up in communities where joint use was a matter of course. And what joint use means is that the local municipality and the school district cooperate with one another in terms of providing recreation opportunities on school district property and vice versa, in the case of the community that I grew up in, for athletic competition opportunities on city-owned property. Now, we don't have that kind of situation here, so what joint use would mean for Cambria is enhancing recreation opportunities for the community on school district property. I'm not proposing that the district spend any money. I'm not proposing that the district even expend a lot of staff time on this. What I am proposing is that we simply direct the PROS Commission to follow up on the discussions that Superintendent Adams and I have had and explore the possibilities and at some point in the future report back to the board with some recommendations. Recommendations could run from on the one hand, not having any joint use at all to a possibility of maybe having a joint powers agreement or something like that with the school district, whereby the recreation assets, such as they are of the district, can be combined with the school district, and use of school district property could be enhanced for recreation purposes. I do have the PROS Commissioner, the Chairman of the PROS Commission here, who I think wants to address the board on this issue, and that's Steve Niffen. Mr. Niffen.
Great. Thank you, Mr. President, Board. I am as excited. When I got the call from Mr. Sanders this morning that this was going to be on the agenda, was most excited. This is actually something that I've kind of personally looked forward to for 4 or 5 years now, being on the PROS Commission and working towards a community park, but also realizing that we have other assets in the community that need to be utilized on the school grounds. So just the authority to start the conversation with the school board and those guys is a wonderful way to go down a path that I think is probably more pragmatic and obviously cheaper for the community. So I'm happy for that endorsement if that's what that is. Thank you.
Thank you. We also have Mr. Thompson here, who is a PROS commissioner. I don't know if you wanted to add anything.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, want to echo Steve's thoughts. When I lived in Granada Hills in the San Fernando Valley, I was president of the Granada Hills Youth Recreation Center, and we negotiated a joint agreement with the Metropolitan Water District where we had 1,000 kids playing baseball and soccer on their fields and at no cost to the public. And so certainly having this opportunity to work with the school district is very, very exciting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We also have a request to speak from Steve Figler.
I have a lot of background in this area professional and training. And I was also a member of the PROS Commission for 4 years. And I think this is a marvelous step forward, and I encourage this sort of thing.
Great. Thank you, Steve. We also have a request to speak from Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon again. Just a reminder of some history.
He's on school district property for discussions with the school district superintendent, school board, etc. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. That takes us back to item 9A. Which is presentation of part two of the Cambria Community Services District Supplemental Long-Term Water Supply Alternatives. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thank you. So this is the second. Last month we had the background history on September 23rd, and just for reference sake, staff had the presentation actually pulled with the great assistance of AGP video, and when you go out to the link, you have that kind of bifurcated from the whole entire board meeting. So the reference I was just going to give is SLO, S-L-O, and then a dash, SPAN, S-P-A-N, .org, / media, and then you'll choose CCSD because there's a bunch of cities out there, and then you'll see it. It's in quotation marks. It says item 9A, water history. We're going to do the same thing this month, and I'm going to repeat that one more time as a reference, okay? SLO, S-L-O, dash, SPAN, S-P-A-N, .org, / media, M-E-D-I-A. And then when you get on that page, you're just going to click on CCSD and go to September 23rd, and you'll see this actually separated from the agenda, so you can actually just watch this presentation. And we'll do the same here for this meeting and this presentation, and we thank very much AGP Video for working with us and actually pulling that out of the video presentation. So today's presentation is on supplemental long-term water supply alternatives considered, and then next month on November 10th will be the project cost estimates and financing options. So I am going to turn it over to District Engineer Bob Gressens.
Okay, thank you, Tammy. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, for this opportunity. I do have a little bit of project cost estimates sprinkled in this presentation, but I thought the next meeting would focus more heavily on the financing. So if I've gotten ahead of myself and you don't want to hear that, just give me the high sign and I can skip past it. As far as today's presentation goes, as part two of this three-part series, the content would be a brief discussion of the Water Master Plan background, summarize the basic Water Master Plan recommendations, briefly describe the alternatives considered, spend a little time explaining why recycled water does not substitute the need for a potable supply, and that was partially based on some of the questions that came up at the last meeting, review estimated cost of various alternatives, and then respond to questions. Let me get this thing fired up here. Okay. All right. There we go. A little background in the Water Master Plan. In 2000, there was a phased Water Master Plan developed. It was phased because of some funding concerns, so the idea was to do what could be done at that time with the funds that were available. In 2001 to 2004, there were various reports completed. We had Kenny Jenks on board at that point. The top priority was for firefighting needs, and that focused on the water distribution system. That's the pipelines and the streets that are connected to the hydrants and the storage tanks. The other main report they did was a report on recycled water, as well as the what they called the long-term supply alternatives assessment, which was the potable water supply. From about 2004 to 2008, some of the more critical fire safety improvements were built, such as the Pine Knolls tank and the East-West Ranch pipeline. There was also quite a bit of effort spent in that time on build-out reduction and how to come up with a cap on potential build-out. So then in 2008, the Water Master Plan Program EIR was finally certified after a public review process. And one of the key mitigation measures as part of that was the build-out program, build-out reduction program. And that program-level EIR is intended to serve as a master EIR that various project-level EIRs would tier under or tier off of. So you wouldn't have to repeat the whole issue of growth over and over again on each individual project, because that was starting to happen on some of the other projects in the past. As far as the supply or alternatives assessment, Kenny Jinks essentially looked at numerous past studies and reports that had Miano water supply, whale rock exchange, hard rock drilling, recycled water, demand management, the San Simeon Dam and Reservoir at the Van Gordon site, and then Jack Creek Dam and Reservoir. After looking at all that, the three key recommendations, and I want to emphasize these are not the either-or recommendations. They're all being recommended. Water conservation, which is the demand management measures that were adopted as part of the 2005 Urban Water Management Plan. Desalination to augment the potable supply while providing the long-term drought protection, as well as recycled water for non-potable irrigation and landscaping. So those are the three main recommendations that came out of the Water Master Plan. The cost estimates at that time, and we have it in both 2002 dollars, which was the basis in the Kennedy Jenks report, as well as the updated to 2008 dollars, which was done at the time of the program level EIR. But you could see the recycled water system in 2008 dollars was about $6.8 million. Desalination, they did I think at least three different sizing scenarios at that time. And the range in cost was about $12 million to close to $16 million. I had a note at the bottom of this slide to show that the 602-acre-foot size, which is the current recommended size, is roughly $14 million in 2008 dollars. And that's not including the solar. Just a little more detailed discussion on recycled water, because I felt it was warranted from past comments. There was a backbone system developed, as you can see in this illustration. It was intended to provide treated wastewater effluent to the proper level for use on irrigation from the treatment plant at Heath Lane off of Windsor and going all the way out to the new elementary school site. Along the way, it would pick up areas like the proposed park, the community park, and the middle school and some other larger irrigated areas. The plan had both what we called a no-net increase demand of potential recycled water users, as well as future demands. And to give you an idea what we meant by no-net increase demands, and I have more slides that describe this in detail, is you basically have no change in the aquifer balance. So in other words, you wouldn't be withdrawing any more water or not allowing as much water to percolate into the aquifer by just simply replacing existing potable demands with recycled water demands. So it's a no-net increase type of concept. Then they identified about 50 acre feet in future additional recycled water demands, which were likely to occur that were off of that main backbone. And that would be the park, for example, the community park that's not built yet, and a few other demands that were in there. Some of the more difficult areas with recycled water, and considering that as an alternative, is the way our district has to operate at the base of San Simeon Creek. And this is a simplified diagram, but operations spends a lot of time on this. We have the upstream potable wells, and this is just a cross-section of the aquifer. And downstream, there's this, I use a different color here in this illustration, but it shows the percolation ponds. That's the treated wastewater effluent that percolates and forms a hydraulic underground barrier that keeps the ocean water over here from migrating back into the wells. That's the intent. So what operations does is they try to maintain a positive hydraulic gradient from the wells down to the perk pond area, so you're not backing water up. Then downstream from the perk ponds, we have the lagoon area in the mouth of San Simeon Creek Lagoon, which is also a critical downstream habitat area. So there's a lot of factors at play here. For example, if you, in the dry months, if these wells get pulled down too low, there's the concern about the percolation ponds backing up towards them, so they might have to pump these out. There's a pump in the middle here that the wastewater guys can operate. There's also a State Water Resource Control Board diversion permit that says we need to maintain flow into the mouth of the lagoon. So it's quite a balancing act that operations is involved with each year. And it will vary depending on the amount of rainfall that occurred the prior season and just how low the wells are getting. So it's a complicated little system. I just wanted to point that out as a potable water system alternative. Therefore, it was given a lower funding priority than a new potable water supply along the process. Yes, sir.
Question, Bob. How much, do you know off the top of your head, how much of the treated water is needed to maintain the mound at San Simeon Creek?
There's been some very rough estimates stated, but it really needs a detailed analysis to come up with a concrete number. That's my opinion of this. Mm-hmm. I know there were some numbers mentioned in the past. I've never felt that comfortable with them. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second.
Okay.
And part of the reason.
All right.
Let's see. If you divert 50 acre feet of percolated wastewater treatment effluent that's going into those perk ponds and into the base of that groundwater basin right now, it will require further analysis. And part of the reason is you're going to have to make it environmentally defensible in your project level environmental clearance document. And you do have critical habitat immediately downstream. So that makes that, what I'm saying here is not a slam dunk. It's not quite as straightforward as it might be in other areas where you don't have the habitat issues. There's another commitment that's out there that adds to the mix. That area that was between the kind of the perk pond and the lagoon, there's a ag well there. It's non-potable water, but there is a commitment to provide up to another 184 acre feet in long-term demand, additional demand, per a settlement agreement with Clyde Warren that was entered into back in November of 2006. So that all has to be considered as well, besides just the basic operation. And then, again, it's a $6.8 million planning-level cost accuracy cost estimate for the treatment system and the backbone portion of its distribution. Let's see if I can get this.
When you say a background, Bob, that's
backbone,
really,
I'm sorry.
That's basically to supply possibly six users, say? I mean,
I'm guessing 6 to 10 users in there. The larger demand users.
It's not what's going to arrive at my doorstep.
Right, and that's one of the issues with a recycled water system. As you can't put in a duplicate distribution system just to go down residential road. You'd be ripping up the entire town and serving very low demands. So to optimize the cost effectiveness of it, you identify your larger demands and design the backbone around getting to those larger demands. It could be expanded in the future. There was another 60-acre feet identified, for example, that they called less likely customers or demands of recycled water. And that would be, for example, running a pipeline to the state park's campground, which is quite a ways away, or getting one up to the Cambria Cemetery, which is quite a ways away. So there is another 60-acre feet on top of those that 100 that I just mentioned, but we felt those were less likely to proceed just based on the distance they were and the number of streets and so forth that had to be ripped up to hit those demands. I don't know why my little pointer, there it goes. Yeah, I want to make sure I'm getting the right spot. There was a present value analysis. Some people use present worth analysis on this discussion of the various alternatives. This particular table came out of a response to comments in the program EIR, and it's in section 13, part 2, which is posted on our website for those that are interested in details. This was updated to 2008 cost using the numbers of the different Kenny Jenks reports and try to summarize it all. But we had each alternative. There was a capital cost, which would be the construction cost. In some cases, there was a buy-in cost. For example, the Whale Rock Exchange would have a buy-in cost for buying into Nacimiento water, which it would be replacing. We had seawater desalination at about four different alternatives called out. We had recycled water, the San Simeon Dam and Reservoir option, and Jack Creek Dam and Reservoir option. The costs were falling in the range of a low of about $600 acre foot for the San Simeon Dam and all the way up to approximately $2,000 an acre foot for a long-term supply. I've heard some recent discussions where that may not be the case anymore. It may be just for emergency supply only, which would make it even more expensive.
Two public agencies, City of San Luis Obispo and the State of California through the Department of Corrections.
Those are two of the main ones. The other point of the Whale Rock Exchange water, when you buy Nacimiento, it'd be a take-or-pay provision in the contract where you pay for the water whether you use it or not. If you buy 600-acre feet, whether you use 100-acre feet or no acre feet, you're going to be paying for 600-acre feet.
Which is the same as the State Water Project.
Right.
It's all take-or-pay.
So they all have their different costs. The roughly the 602-acre foot per year seawater desal was like in a 1230 range per acre foot, and that's after it's been discounted for the use of solar power. It includes all the costs of the solar panels in the capital cost there. There was no discounting for any grant money, so these are the full cost. It's not just the local share cost for desal. It's the full cost, assuming there is no federal funding whatsoever. And that's just where the cost fell out. Again, this was on a 30-year basis. And I can go back and answer more detailed questions. I don't want to bore people with details at this point, but this is available on our website, and we can direct people to it if they want to see it. I did add two new notes to this table since it was done in the program level EIR response to comments. Note two I added to because there was always a issue over the 700-acre foot per year Whale Rock alternative. The old report that Kenny Jenks was using had they estimated a water treatment plant at $178,000, and we knew you're not going to build a water treatment plant for $178,000. So I went ahead and got some of my references together and did my own estimate. I came up with close to $5 million for a water treatment plant of that size. Again, planning level accuracy. That's not reflected in those capital costs shown for that particular line item. So you'd have to add $5 million in capital costs and $5 million in present worth cost.
And if you did that, the dollar per acre foot for that alternative would be roughly $1,470 per acre foot instead of the $1,232 that's shown up there right now.
On top of that, is there not significant energy costs associated with the Whale Rock Exchange alternative because of the need to pump water through a pipeline over some pretty significant terrain between Whale Rock and Cambria?
Not necessarily with Whale Rock, but if you had to pump from the Nacimiento Reservoir, it's going to be built in as a cost of replacing that water because there is an elevation gain in getting the Nacimiento water over. Let's see. I had just another side note that I had on the recycled water, just that that cost used 160 acre feet per year instead of 100 acre feet per year, which was the more likely numbers. And if it was reduced down to 100 acre feet per year, the unit cost would be about $2,319 per acre foot for recycled water versus what's shown on the table at about 1,450 or so acre feet. So it's again, it's planning level accuracy numbers.
In practice, you'd have to make the recycled water cheaper for people to buy it, right? So you'd literally end up subsidizing it.
That is practiced in some communities.
Yeah. But, I mean, people are not going to pay more for recycled water if they can get it cheaper out of the tap.
Yeah, that's a whole other question I didn't get into, and I'm not prepared to, quite frankly. But, yeah, how do you motivate people to switch over to recycled water? You know, would you sell it to them at a subsidized rate somehow to get them to sign up? That's a very good question. This was a slide from a past presentation back in October 2009, and I've tried to make it clearer than it was before. I think the last slide was pretty confusing. Not to say this one isn't confusing as well, but what I attempted to do here is to show roughly what the net local cost share would be of the desalination alternatives. In the past, we didn't know about the $3 million credit, whether that was going to be approved or not by the Corps. That was approved since that time. So as you go across these columns, first of all, I have a couple of rows here for different projects, $1,000 number that's shown there. You then take 25% of that, which is $4,175,000, but then you finally subtract off $3 million. And you can see the local share goes down to $1,175,000. Now, that is a substantial drop, as you can see, from that kind of dashed curved arrow from $3.4 million down to a little under $1.2 million. So I did that for each alternative. The next one was taking an inflated project cost to what we had estimated as midpoint construction of June of 2012, and no solar with that one. And that was going from a local cost of about $4.1 million. And if, again, the authorization could be increased, you'd go down to a little under $2 million, or the $1,845,000. Take that same strategy and apply it to the option with solar power, you would go from a local share cost of about $5 million down to $2,775,000. So I hope that clarifies that old slide and why it would make sense to work with our lobbyist to get that authorization ceiling increased. And I'll pause here just to make sure there's not any questions on that. Okay. There's another policy consideration that I think we just kind of touched on with recycled water. When you look at the local cost and the cost of things, and you could argue that maybe we can find some federal funding or some grant money for recycled water, but the policy decision was, should the CCSD spend roughly $6.8 million towards a recycled water system that may provide 50 to 100 acre feet, depending on the estimate, or should the CCSD spend a local share amount, potentially as low as $2 to $3 million, towards desalination, which is a potable water system that can provide full summertime capacity and still be capable of providing year-round capacity
during an extended drought. So if you had no recharge of your aquifer, for example, it could continue running and still supply water. That was a big policy decision, and essentially it's a matter of prioritizing, and recycled water got a lower priority. And that, I think, is that. So I'm at the point where I'll stop and try to answer any questions that you might have at this point and be glad to elaborate further.
Bob, before we get into questions, let me add just one perspective here. One thing that your presentation didn't take into account is the permitting requirements for some of these alternatives. And, you know, we've heard a lot of talk around the community about alternatives like side stream storage, whatever that means. One of the alternatives is damming up Jack Creek. Steiner Creek was mentioned as a possibility for a dam. The permitting processes for those kinds of alternatives are so daunting that you would never get from where we are now to the point where you'd have an authorized project. There are several layers of agencies involved, from the Environmental Protection Agency to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to the California Department of Fish and Game, that I think would make it virtually impossible to obtain the permits for some of these alternatives. And the district would spend from now until, pardon the expression, hell freezes over, chasing those permits and never get there. I think most people in California can't remember when the last dam was authorized in California. We are now talking about tearing dams down, and there's serious consideration being given to taking down, for example, the Hetch Hetchy dam that is owned by the city of San Francisco. So those kinds of alternatives that have direct impacts associated with endangered species that occupy the two watersheds that we draw water from, it would just make it virtually impossible to get an alternative online that would impact those endangered species to the degree that the kinds of alternatives that people talk about. I think it would be foolish to chase those alternatives.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, and I probably should have had a more explanation on that subject. I know, I think it was in 2006 that the Congressional Federal Register came out with designating all the streams in this area as being critical steelhead habitat.
Right.
And it's very difficult to
somehow siphon off even more water or build a dam to impound water, I think, is just pie in the sky. The permitting process would result in us spinning wheels, spending money, and going nowhere.
Well, yeah, and as you well know, nothing is easy in this day and age.
No.
Permitting in California, and then when you get inside the coastal zone, it goes up by order of magnitude.
That's right.
Trying to permit something inside the coastal zone is much more difficult. I've told some of the consultants that maybe worked inland and not in the coastal zone, that it's almost like coming to a different country.
A whole different set of rules, that's for sure. Director Shaldicott.
I was going to say that early days I was on the board. I think it was just the red-legged frog and the tidewater goby were the main critters that were critical, but there's a expanded list since then, all using habitat.
There are a number of listed species. Yeah. You know, tidewater goby in the lagoons is a critical one that's we have to be aware of and to avoid impacts to lagoons. And
right.
Well, you have migrating steelhead, you have young of the year steelhead that'll live in the lagoons year round.
Yeah.
There's a number of species.
So one of the problems you sort of brought to my mind is if you build a habitat which is a lake, say, then immediately the critters inhabit the lake, so you can't take the water out of the lake. So all you've done is design a nice habitat. Yeah,
it has
habit. So
that's one of the issues that I've worried about with recycled water, basically throughout the state. Is you can create an artificial habitat from a wastewater plant, and if you have a listed species that thrives in that nicely treated wastewater effluent, you're going to be limited on what you can divert elsewhere for using on a park, for example, or a golf course or something like that. You really get to, you have a lot to defend when you do that diversion.
Even accidentally impounded water can stop major projects. There have been freeway construction projects that have been halted because of a significant rain. A period of time lapses, and lo and behold, there's an endangered species that crops up in a artificial pond. A lot of these projects have biological monitors on site, and they are empowered with the ability to stop a project if they discover a species that's protected under either the federal or the state endangered species acts. Okay, any other questions from board members? I have several requests to speak on this item. The first is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I heard a rumor that if we humans keep doing what we're doing, the next big endangered species is going to be us.
You may be right.
And by our own activities. I was not going to say this because I thought this was next month, but I do want to point out in font size 32 with bold, underline, too, what a word that Engineer Gressens just said, and that word was if. And on the appropriations issue, many of us don't pay enough attention to all the standards of finances in the federal government. And it's true that the federal government of the United States of America has authorized $10,300 for this project. Authorized is like when you say to your six-year-old, yes, we'll have a birthday party. The six-year-old assumes it's going to be in the next week, but you didn't say diddly squat about when. Authorized money means nothing, basically, until it is appropriated. And the only money that has ever been appropriated by the federal government to this project, if I may just use that term for the moment, is $3,555,000.
Where did you get that number?
Because I looked at the federal records, Lois Cap site, and the committee sites in the federal government, sir.
This
was on the 4th of August.
No, I'm just asking. Okay. Are you including the ARRA money?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, that wasn't an appropriation for this project. It was,
sir,
but I understand. It's $3.5 million worth of money.
Only the criteria that were used there.
Okay.
If we say that this project will now cost us approximately $20 million, let's say that, and we get no more if money, then according to what has happened so far, the CCSD is responsible for $16,517,500. That's what we, if we go ahead with the project, if, thank you, Mr. Gressens, it's an important word, if we get no more federal funds, we've got to come up with, I don't know, rub sticks together and get solar power or something for some of that $16 million. In the cost analysis of what has been called alternatives, we have never on any of them, Water Master Plan, EIR, EIS, any of it, had what's now being very common in environmental justice analysis as well as ecological justice analysis. What is the projected dollar environmental cost of each option? That's never been here. I don't know if I like steelhead trout particularly, although I used to catch them.
Do you mean the cost of mitigation measures?
I'm saying, let's just say, we put the desal in, flowing nicely when we need it in a whatever drought, yeah? And all of a sudden we start looking at what is now the first state marine park in California, done by state parks, and all of a sudden we're seeing more of what I saw the other day, and I called it in to USGS. We're seeing more and more dead sea otters on the beach.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden we're looking at what's happening already with phytoplankton in the oceans, which is, by the way, why coastal needs a lot of there is an ocean there. So what people are saying is you can't just say, oh, this water is going to cost you $2 a drop and this water is going to cost you $4 a drop, and never take into account the effect on the environment and the quality of it long term.
That's what an EIR slash EIS is for.
Not financially,
well,
sir.
I'm sorry.
But, sir, has it ever been done with finances?
If you're talking about mitigation measures, then the answer is
no.
Yes.
But, sir, you can talk about mitigation measures and mitigate, which is an excellent compromise device. I'm all in favor of it. But what if there are long-term environmental consequences which cannot be mitigated against? How come we never factor in those costs to our environment?
There are environmental costs associated with every single alternative.
I'm not denying that.
Okay.
I'm saying we've never seen them ranked.
Well,
we've never even
Again, that's why we have laws that require that EIRs and EISs be prepared.
Another Sanders-Bettenhausen disagreement. I do want to make two more quick points, sir. I would like to see publication on the website of the minutes of July and August 2003. I want just now to say, if people look at those minutes, they will see that I asked the board in July of 2003 when we could look for and hear a board discussion, a thorough board discussion of the alternatives. And the vote was taken then, and later there has, unless my aging memory, friends, getting up there towards 70, and I'm going to hit it, maybe. Depends on the environment. I do not recall this board ever having a serious discussion about the alternatives.
Well, the district adopted a water master plan, which Mr. Gressens just discussed.
2003? I'm just asking people to look at the minutes, nothing
else.
No,
we adopted the water master plan a couple of years ago. There was a thorough program EIR.
2003, July. And then the EIR
was
later.
No, it was done in 2008, I believe.
You're talking about the EIR.
I'm talking about the adoption of the water master plan.
No.
I'm sorry, but it was done a couple of years ago, and all of this was all discussed.
I'll certainly go back and look at the minutes of 2008
We couldn't adopt the water master plan until the EIR was prepared and certified.
In that sense, I understand, sir. I clearly misspoke. And I'm glad that the minutes certainly must show that there was a substantive board discussion of all the alternatives.
You can go look at the minutes.
I will. Okay. My last comment. I was born back in the Dakotas. And when I was third grade, one of my uncles got washed out in North Dakota. My great uncle.
Okay, can you come to a conclusion, please?
Yes, I'm
going to
read you only a little bit of a book about that. Because this was, you remember FDR's agricultural secretary? Perhaps some of you are older.
Please come to a conclusion, Ms. Bettenhausen.
There were two plans on what to do with the Missouri River. One was by Pick and one was by Sloan. I simply want to read one sentence, sir, if I may.
Please.
Roosevelt's Secretary of the Interior, Harold Ickes, sure remember him.
Ickes.
That's the Western pronunciation. Was fearless in his official rebuke of the Pick plan. Quote, "The Army Corps of Engineers' reputation for arrogance is legendary, and every effort that has been made to induce the Corps to listen to recommendations made by the ablest civil engineers in the country has
the lack of a fallback plan. It doesn't seem to be any. On and on again. And year after year, we keep putting all of our eggs in the desal basket. In 1993 to 1994, CCSD, with consultants and engineers, some of those mentioned today, investigated Santa Rosa Creek, and the consultant report said too many fatal flaws. The area too small, residential area, county park, and any infrastructure, including wells, must be 500 feet from the lagoon. The county said they wouldn't allow transmission lines to cross the park. So the CCSD moved on to San Simeon. This is in 1994. there the superintendent of the park said, we're not going to allow you to drill and on our beach. Dave, that was the general manager, this is what the park superintendent said. Dave, considering our resource protection and recreation provisions, we're just not going to let you drill here. This is a state park. Go find a new place for your test wells, period. So they were kicked out of there, the CCSD. So what do? We leased a lot up off of Lone Pine, off of frontage road, and built some sort of big caissons and pipes out to the ocean. That was the desal plant that was thrown out with a technology that was so horrible that eventually that whole plan, that was all that money was wasted, was thrown out, and the general manager was fired. Nobody seems to mention that. The whole plant was thrown out. It was too expensive. It was bad technology, and the general manager was fired. Then Bob Greshens comes aboard, and he gets the scheme to go back to San Simeon, but he doesn't look at the law to find out, and this is in 1997, that it's against the law to do wells there. So we waste all that money. So rather than getting an alternative, then we come back to Santa Rosa. Bob Greshens gets into all his old files that I already have. I can see his digital fingerprints over everything he read because he gave the digital files to somebody that gave them to me. I can see what he read. He knows that you can't drill within 500 feet of the lagoon, yet he hires the same old consultants to go out, and he says that there's channels out there. But we found out that the channels off of Shamel Park are only 24 feet deep. There aren't any channels. So here we are still trying to beat this dead horse when we have other alternatives, and it astounds me that you're saying that permits are hard for other alternatives. What could be harder than this? My friend Tina is going to read to you the most current information about what's going on at Santa Rosa Creek, because we will never hear it from this board. Thank you.
Before you leave, Ms. Barton, you got some of your facts wrong.
No, I don't.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Mr. Chaldicott's turn to speak, okay. Please.
I was on the board long before Mr.
Blanc
joined the board. I was there when the desal was planned and so and so. To start with, we did not lease a lot. We own a lot. We still have it. It's still a possibility if we ever decide to use that as an exit to the beach. We already have it. The second thing was your description of all the bad things about the desal, most of which are untrue. That's strictly your opinion.
It's okay. Not my opinion. I have the records.
The records do not in any case state that it was horrible, okay, and all those various descriptions used. It's strictly your interpretation. So
may
thank you.
Can I introduce this into the record, please?
Official letter. If you'd like. Thank you for your comments, Ms. Burton.
The next
request to speak is from Jim Berenger.
I have to correct that. She just said it was shut down in 95. I was there in 96 and 97, along with three other board members who didn't join the board until 96. So therefore, it was there. Unless it was a well.
Please. Mr. Berenger.
Well, thank you for letting me comment, and I appreciate the summary that you've done, and I think it was quite accurate. And I've been told for several months that this is a very divisive issue. I see that we have but 20 people in the audience right now, and what I'd like to address is those people that are on the radio or maybe watching this on C-SPAN, that tomorrow, I've advertised in the newspaper and on the radio, that tomorrow, Friday from 2 to 4, and Saturday from 2 to 4, those people that are still thinking that they want to get more information on that, they can come to my front porch and have an open discussion without oak desks. And I hope that helps.
Thank you. Appreciate it. The next request to speak is from Mary Webb.
Thank you, directors. I really appreciate Mickey's historical background. I think that really was helpful and really a smart thing to do to try to set the facts straight, because apparently we can't really get them here. Anybody who really wants to know what happened and how these questions and issues have never been answered need to go ahead and just read themselves reports like the build-out reduction program that doesn't really do anything to reduce build-out. I didn't even... Well, that is not acceptable. What's also missing up there are the tertiary treatment of wastewater, the Warren Reservoir, off-stream storage. Mr. Sanders, we are not talking about dams. Every time we talk about something like off-stream storage, you immediately go to reservoirs and say about how, or dams.
That is not what I said.
You talk about dams, and you say that dams were never going to be allowed, that they that there is, it's so difficult to do the permitting for dams. We are not talking about dams. And so what happens then is the general public thinks that we're talking about dams that could never be permitted. That is not what we're talking about. Sidestream, offstream storage, you don't know what it is? Come on. It's not a dam. It's a pond.
I'm going to interrupt you right there because you're standing there telling a complete falsehood. What I said about an hour and some minutes ago is that to do sidestream storage, you'd have to construct some sort of a weir. Do you know what a weir is?
Yes, I do.
You'd have to somehow divert the water from the stream and put it into some sort of a storage facility.
Okay, sure.
I didn't say you'd have to build a dam to do side stream
storage.
It
was your next sentence that said dams are not going to be permitted. And so you say it together as if we're talking about dams.
There is at least one alternative that involves the construction of a dam.
Okay, well, we're not talking about the construction of dams.
Okay.
What you don't have up there...
Thank you.
You do have dams up there, and you conveniently say dams are not permitted. So therefore, you eliminate dams from your matrix. What you don't have up there, it's what the sins of omission are as bad, even worse in my mind, than the ones of commission.
I'm going to challenge you one more time because, again, you're telling a falsehood. I did not insinuate, imply, etc., that sidestream storage, whatever that is, involves the construction of a dam. I did say it would involve the construction of a weir or using some other means to extract the water from the two streams.
I agree with you. You
Thank
did
you.
Not say it calls for construction of a dam.
That's
you
right.
said, after I said that sidestream storage would be permitted, and you could do it, what you said, your next sentence was, dams are not permitted and would not be allowed. So the inference is that we are talking about dams.
See.
Do you see what I'm...
Go ahead. Conclude your remarks.
Saltwater intrusion is an invisible boogeyman that you can't see and we can't see. So therefore, it's a nice little football that you keep tossing back and forth as if we need to have fresh water for saltwater intrusion, which, of course, we probably do. The problem with it is that you use saltwater intrusion to say that we can't do certain water alternatives, and at the same time for desal, we can use all that fresh water that you're saying at the same time needs to prevent saltwater intrusion, we can suddenly use to dilute the brine.
We use treated water to prevent saltwater
intrusion.
Oh,
you were also going to use
fresh water.
You're going to use treated water.
We do.
I'd have to look back at the Water Master Plan about that, but okay.
Okay.
I'll read it, the 500
That'd
pages again.
That'd be a good
again.
Idea if you did that.
The other thing is that the cost analysis, this board is just talking about a cost analysis for Whale Rock, but we've never seen a cost analysis for Whale Rock. So this is just a verbal cost analysis that you're doing right now for the community. That's just not acceptable.
Well,
we should really
see. The cost
really
analysis is in the Water Master Plan.
Okay. So, and then the agencies that you say are opposed to dams and that would really have major issues with something like a dam are also the agencies that have major issues with desalination. These are the hundreds of pages of agency letters that were never reviewed in a public forum. Those agencies are the U.S. Fish and Wildlife had an issue with geotech drilling. NOAA had an issue with geotech drilling. The SLO Air Quality Control Board had an issue with geotech drilling. The California Department of Fish and Game had major issues with geotech drilling, and so did the California State Heritage Commission. So to say that this desal and geotech drilling has no environmental problems and as compared to other water alternatives is just really not right.
I don't think anybody said that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I think
Director
Chalvica. There was mention of endangered species that we are endangering.
Uh-huh.
And our history, because we've had it studied by environmental biologists, as the species are thriving on the streams that we're responsible for. And I think there's a credit for our water department. They control our pumping to do just that. So I don't like to hear remarks that we're putting the endangered species at risk.
How would we know?
Because we have environmental studies on a yearly basis. Thank you.
The next request to speak is from Amanda Rice. Amanda?
Thank you, President Sanders. By nature, I'm a person who likes to share. I'm generous to a fault, usually for working with AGP to get these videos up. I think it's definitely a service to the community. We could use more workshop-like situations to let people know what's going on. I think it's an asset to the community. So if you look at if you look at your water bill, the water master plan says you want to provide 18 units per household per bi-monthly billing cycle. Well, that's about 232 gallons at the upper end. Could be 221, depends on how far into the 18 units you are, of course. This community uses nowhere near that. This community, most people, 70% of the people, were not surcharged when we had surcharges in 07. They were using 12 units or less. 12 units is 159 gallons for your household for the day. The state of California, in the 20 by 2020 plan, where they're trying to reduce water use by 20%, their goal for indoor water use, this doesn't count outdoor watering, which is less than most places here, is 55 gallons per person per day. That's 9 units for a 2-person household, and this community averages 2.2 people per house. I don't have one of the 0.2 in my house, but maybe that's dogs or something. I don't know. It is very difficult to do water planning and to figure out what your community is going to demand in terms of water. There's been so many advances in water technologies that make water use more efficient without sacrificing any amount of quality of life. Just if you look at water from toilet use alone, in 92, when the state of California said nothing, no more of these 6-gallon per flush toilets, the amount of water that's been saved just from that, and there is no difference in quality. You can even get one that's less than that now, and the quality is still there. It doesn't affect your life, but you're using half as much water, and in a community the size of ours, the difference between us using, say, 9 units and 12 units is per year. If everybody used 9 units per year, every household, we'd be using 579 acre feet. If everybody used 12 units, and then we'd be using 830 acre feet. That's a lot for 3 units per connection per billing cycle. So the size of the community really makes a big difference in the amount of water that we use. I'm going to wrap up my comments just by saying this. I question the assumptions that we are making in terms of how much additional water we need and the cost for that water for how often we may need it. The calculations were done on the super worst case scenario, which you have to plan for the worst case. It could be that we only need the desal plant for 200 acre feet every 5 or 6 years. It's a lot of money to run something every 5 or 6 years. I just would really like to emphasize this community does not use and probably will not be able to use 18 units per connection bimonthly, and maybe that needs to be reconsidered in designing whatever alternative is chosen. Thank you.
My only comment is on a statistic that you just put out. You said that 12 units on average per household would result in 830 acre feet per year of consumption.
For residential, and that doesn't count. If you add on 25% for commercial, it's about 1,037 acre feet.
Okay, well, we're pumping 800 to 850 acre feet per year. So we're on the knife's edge.
We're not. The last year we used 700.
Well, The demand for water is down. If you go back historically, and it's been higher than that.
It goes up to 810.
The maximum that we can extract
is 1230.
The maximum we seem to be able to extract is around 800 to 850, because that's all there is.
We have permits to allow up to 1230 from both aquifers.
I know, but the water's just not there.
Until there's more detailed in-stream water studies, we don't know that. That's what the California Coastal Commission has asked for.
Thank you. Historically, I think we do know that.
Amanda, there's one wild card in your calculation. That's the number of vacationing homes here, people that are here just part-time. Usually when the economy is down, they don't go on vacation, so there are homes standing empty. Our worst-case scenario is where they all retire here tomorrow. And we have no idea what
is. I think in a world that is getting more chaotic climatically, just irresponsible of us. Thank you.
Thank you. The next request to speak is from Harry Farmer.
Good afternoon. I want to thank Ms. Rice for her very thoughtful and well-thought-out comments. It's a lovely day in Cambria today, by the way. I just want to remind us of that, considering we're spending almost 4 hours indoors here on a beautiful day. I wrote down something that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Chairman Sanders. A quote. This is regarding the discussion about side stream reservoirs, and you said that the permitting processes are daunting several layers of agencies, and then you said we'd be spinning wheels, spending money, and going nowhere. Seems like it kind of reminds me of what we've been doing for the past 9 years, but that's just my personal observation. I just want to address one issue, and hopefully I can make it as quickly as possible. So talking here about water alternatives, I believe that's the discussion. In the past, ranchers have offered to allow side stream reservoirs on their land to capture winter runoff, to replenish the aquifer, and this runoff would be available for summer use for the community of Cambria. Clyde Warren offered to make his property available for a side stream reservoir.
He offered to sell it.
Clyde Warren made his property available for water, let's say for water storage.
Yeah, he offered to sell his property to the CCSD.
Okay, and?
Well, I'm just saying, the implication in your statement was he offered it somehow gratis, but he already
said that.
Okay.
I didn't apply that. But I think what wound up happening was that the district kind of went out of their way to make his life more difficult, you know, involving him in lawsuits, at one point not even allow him access to his property when he needed to do repairs on a pump.
Mr. Farmer, that is patently false. That's just not true.
All right. Well, then I'll
Mr. Warren went to the State Water Resources Control Board, and he filed a complaint because he felt that he was entitled to access to a well, and the district disagreed with him. There was never any adjudication of his claim. We simply sat down and we worked it out with Clyde Warren. Rather amicably, I might say.
So I'll move forward now, okay?
Thank you.
Earlier this afternoon, the observation was made, I believe, that the Coastal Commission in 1999 observed that there was a severe water shortage here in Cambria. I happened to talk to Ralph Covell just a couple of days ago, and he told me that he offered to put a reservoir on his property in 1999, and he spoke with then General Manager Ken Topping, and Ken Topping told him that they weren't interested in pursuing anything like that because desalination was the direction that the district was going to go.
The idea of a reservoir on the Central Coast Ranch is an old one. It's been around for a long time.
I'm just telling you what he told me.
Sure.
So, pursuing this, in the past, many ranchers have come forward during drought conditions, giving water they collected in winter months for their own use, you know, to help our town deal with whatever water shortage was taking place. And this often happened at financial cost to themselves. And how were they repaid? In January of 2003, this district sued all the ranchers and property owners on both creek roads for their water rights. So I guess
I'll have to stop you again. We did not sue them. The district did not sue them for their water rights. In California, most of the significant watersheds have been adjudicated. What that means is that either the State Water Resources Control Board or a superior court is petitioned to kind of ferret out who owns what in terms of the water. There has always been some concern that an increase in... Well, I appreciate your point of view, but, you know, we find ourselves in a pretty complex world.
Yeah, you know why? And you know why it's complex? Because people spend too much money trying to figure out how they're going to make more money.
Hold on. I appreciate he had a chance. You spoke. I'm not cutting into your time.
Fine.
But the clarification is very important. I think the public should know. You know, we have a corollary going on right now. People, you hear about this thing about robo signing for deeds. Things are being foreclosed on. Property rights is one of the most fundamental issues on the success of this nation, on the success of any location. Adjudication is essentially just clarifying in a court. Just if I own a home and I have title insurance, that title insurance is filed. That's a form of a duty, if you will. It says that this property belongs to this couple, it's theirs, and this title insurance company will fight it and pay and support us. Whether they're farmers, whether they're communities like ourselves or individuals, when you have a group of people on an area like a basin, a water basin, because of people moving in, towns are developing, neighbors, how do you satisfy, where is your plot line? You get a surveyor out because he knows on the deed where you are. That's all we would do. That's all that was done there. It's a filing and saying, look, we need, because of this complex nature of this basin, we need a fundamental clarification of everyone's rights. It wasn't just our rights. It's cemented, if you will.
That's right.
If it was done right, it was cemented that the people who have riparian rights now know what their riparian rights truly means.
Yeah.
I had two companies, one in New Mexico and in Idaho, and we spent millions of dollars developing because the West is a water rights area. And therefore, everybody had to have documentation and had to have rights. Rights of 1800 trumped rights of 1900. Whether you like it or not, sir, we are in a system where people have rights. I have a right. The farmer has a right. But so does the community of Cambria have a right. So all that was done there, and sorry you have to do it in front of a judge, but who else are you going to do it on? Put a bunch of people in a room and try to argue it out and fight it out? This is the proper way to do things. And doing things as you say is like a group hug is not going to work. Just realize that while it's adjudicated, it's not a lawsuit in the sense of punitive means of action.
That's right.
I think that was what it was intended.
That's correct.
And it worked out for everybody, I would hope.
It didn't proceed, but at some point, I think. At some point, some adjudication, either by the State Water Resources Control Board or a superior court, whether the CCSD is involved or not, is going to be necessary. Because as Mark Twain once said, in California, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. It's just the way it is. I mean, we live in a very complex world, and the CCSD,
it's made complex by people's greed.
Well, that could be, but the CCSD finds itself having to operate in that complex world, whether it's because of greed or some other reason. And so we don't have the power to remake the world. We have to abide by the rules that have been established by federal agencies, state agencies, regional agencies, and so forth. And, you know, you've got five people up here who are just trying to do the best job they can.
Can I say one more thing?
Please.
In March of this year, a forum was organized by citizens of this community. One of the organizers here in the audience today, current candidate for CCSD, Valerie Benz. Experts were brought together to discuss all areas of water alternatives, including experts that live in this town. Where are they today? If this was supposed to be a discussion of water alternatives, where are the experts? Where are the people that really could give us the information so this community can make an informative choice on where to go forward in this town with regard to water? I just want to know.
I don't know.
Where are they? You were supposed to organize something today. Where are those people? You know, not just let me put it this way. I appreciate what Engineer Dressens did today, but this is not what this community deserves. This community deserves better. This is the future of our town.
Not some of these voices, and give us even a little more time than I've heard given in the past. But I do want to say that I think we being the community, has put so much of our resources and so much of our time into pursuing desalination as an option for additional water, and not enough time and resources into the others. Our water master plan is really quite an impressive document, and it outlines ways in which we could be conserving water that we're not doing. We have implemented water conservation, but only in a very limited way. We have no more funds available, for example, for stipends. Maybe that's not the right rebates for people to get front-loading washing machines, which would cut gallons off of their usage every month. There's a plan, an outline of a step-by-step phase by which citizens could be encouraged to use recycled water outside, saving water in cisterns and tanks. And it even includes a step where there would not be allowed anything, but no potable water could be used for outside usages. Some communities have gone in that direction, and there was one recommendation in our report that we do that. If we did that, we would have between 25% and 40%, depending on how you judge it, more potable water available right there, because people would no longer be using it for lawns and gardens. They would be using recycled water, or they would convert to succulents and lower no water usage gardens that many people have started to do in Cambria. This could be done. It's in our own water master plan, but we haven't pursued it because we have put most of our wonderful administrative resources and our board resources, it seems, into pursuing desal. Some of the bills of federal agencies provide funds not only for desal, but we could have applied for water for other water resources. Why didn't we do that?
Before you go on, let me ask you a couple of questions. All right, let's suppose we could wrench a couple of hundred acre feet more out of the system. Would you propose lifting the moratorium?
I certainly would consider it. I think that we have been building homes. I've been seeing homes built all over town and during the moratorium.
Well, those are homes that were in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
That were exempted from the moratorium when it was declared. And that, as we discussed before, there was 121 equivalent dwelling units. Some of that was commercial water, other was residential, but 121 equivalent dwelling units were the water. But let's suppose that we do lift the moratorium, okay? And we have a couple of hundred acre more, acre feet of water, okay? So that gets us to a certain point. We could authorize X number of additional dwelling units and some additional commercial. Then what happens?
We would have to be very careful about how many we let build in any one given year. And we would also have to implement other water saving and water gathering methods. I really do think that...
Okay, but what happens when we run out the string and we get to the point where we can't wrench any more conservation out of the water uses, our practices? What do we do in terms of the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution and the property rights that people have and the mandate that the district has to solve the water shortage problem? You're going to have another moratorium, and you can't have a moratorium forever.
Well, I don't really want to get into that issue right now, because all I wanted to get into was...
But you have to, you have to think these things through. You have to...
Sir, I beg your patience here. I have thought these things through.
Well,
and
okay,
I see
if
in reading the water master plan, there are other alternatives.
Well,
and I think Dr. Brownell's idea about those off-stream gathering places, or whatever they're called, was given short shrift. I think that he's given a lot of thought to this, and there's a lot of ways that that could save us water.
Okay,
no
so
one denies.
You would come back to the point where you would then allow some sort of an alternative water.
When they bought their lots, they did not have the right to water.
Okay, well, we know where you stand. That's fine. Okay.
And I also wanted
to... Please, let's not be interrupting from the
audience. I wanted to mention also that we do need more water storage. No one denies that when the water flows here, tons and tons of water flow out into the ocean. So what sense does it make not to find some way of storing that water rather than letting it all go out and then pumping it back in at great expense?
And as we've explained before, including some time that we took at this meeting, there are several regulatory agencies which I think would have a very difficult problem with that concept, because that water is used by endangered species that use the two streams for habitat. We've got tidewater goby, we've got red-legged frogs, we've got steelhead, and so forth. And particularly the steelhead would be adversely impacted, because if you take all that water out, they wouldn't be able to spawn.
I'm not talking about taking water out. I'm talking about saving water in small ponds when it's going to go out anyway.
But that water that presently goes out to the ocean is used by those species, and I think if you check with the California Department of Fish and Game or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you'll find out that that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't really believe it's been thoroughly explored.
Okay.
As the whale rock, another thing I wanted to mention was the weighting in the Water Master Plan. It gives a lot of points to desalinization, assuming that we are going to get all these funds. We may not. We may only get 25% rather than 75%. So the whole assumption on which the decision was made to prioritize desal was made on an assumption that we would get money that we may not get. There are other resources on here.
So far we've been pretty successful at getting the money.
Well, we'll see. But you could have applied for money for other options, and you seem to be...
There's no federal authorization for any of the other options. It's very specific to desal.
Well, there are other federal grants available. I even read it in the Water Master Plan.
Not with the deficits the way they are now, I don't think so.
Well, that would also, that may also affect our ability to get the funds we hope to get.
We'll see.
My point is, in addition, that the quality of life index built into the design, the proposed design that isn't even really there yet, of course, says we need a 50% quality of life boost in the amount of water we're now using. When, as Amanda Rice pointed out, the amount of water we're actually using is going down, not up. So there's all kinds of reasons why we need to look at this, I think, a little bit more closely. And it seems like you were assuming there's no environmental problems to desal. Well, there's enormous environmental dangers to our ocean species.
I don't think anybody has said that. I don't think any board member has said that there are no serious environmental impacts associated with desal. We'll see. There will be an EIR and an EIS done, and that document, combined document, will assess the environmental impacts associated with desal, and we'll all find out.
Okay, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next request to speak is from Tina Dickerson.
I'm just waiting for you.
Go ahead.
Being polite.
I can multitask.
All right. Well, Tina Dickerson again. I'd like to thank Amanda Rice for her comments, which I agree wholeheartedly with. President Sanders, you talked about spinning wheels and spending dollars, and I think that's exactly what we're doing here with our pursuit of desalination. And when I see Van Skoyek's letter this month, where we're looking at the FY 2011 appropriations process, where Congress may reduce the amount allocated from 75% to 55%, I think we need to really, really, really take a hard look at that. I mean, there is this sort of vision or this dream that you seem to have that, oh, the feds are going to take care of it. You know what? This has been going on for so long and has cost this community so much money and has divided this community. Now, what I want to bring you up to speed on is what's really happening with sonic drill rig for one day to determine if the macro, paleo channel, and water are present. Taking a soil sample in plastic sleeve, taking one water sample, and not leaving any temporary well in place. Thus, it is one day of work effort. Our ERB chief has asked the questions, does this constitute the same project, or can this effort now be looked at as a separate effort and meet the level of only a negative determination that does not have to go before the CCC and can be accomplished in mid-November when the workhorses from the Midwest arrive with the Amish work horse rigging? Thanks for your assistance. I'll call you at 12:30. Okay, and so then Mr. Luster, excuse me, I'm sorry with all this paperwork, has a some questions. He says now to Kathleen Anderson, the project manager, on October 26, 11:26 a.m., hi, Kathy. Thank you for your voicemail earlier today. Read your questions about what activities the Corps can conduct through the end of the week under the Commission's current approval. It generally depends on two things. One, the activities and their associated impact should be within the project parameters already evaluated by the Commission. And two, they would need to be approved by State Parks. Now, we know at this point State Parks has not approved a right of entry permit. So when you talk earlier about how difficult it is to get permits, we're still trying to get a permit from State Parks. Or ACES, I don't say we.
It's a good lesson in how difficult permitting is for
you
anything.
You got it, but I understand you're looking into modifying the project, he goes on, to either use horses or a bulldozer, winch, dead man block, and tackle system to move the drill rig along the beach. For either of those options, we would need at least three things. First, a more detailed description, for example, how and where the rig would be moved on and off the beach. what additional heavy equipment would be needed on the beach, where the dead man point would be located, where the cables would be located, necessary safety zones, etc. Second, a description of the additional impacts these might cause. For example, a larger public access exclusion zone due to safety issues, water quality issues due to horses or potential spills from the bulldozer on the beach, excavating a 6 to 8 foot deep hole on the beach, response to potential failure such as a cable snapping, high waves on over the beach, etc. And third, how and whether the Commission's earlier concurrence addressed these impacts. I understand Parks would also need a detailed description of the proposed work for their ROE consideration. Please note, too, that the wave forecast shows wave heights from 4.5 to 11.5 feet for the rest of the week at Santa Rosa Beach, so we'd want you to include in the description how those heights would affect the amount and type of equipment you're able to mobilize. Hope this is of use. Now, I mean, the point is, this is no easy task. The colonel came in December and promised us by February. Here we are going into November. And their timeline, October 31st, is over Saturday? Sunday?
The colonel had nothing to do with the Coastal Commission's imposition of the condition on the coastal consistency determination that limited the Corps from September the 1st to November the 1st.
Mr. Sanders, first of all, we have a neg deck. Then we have a categorical exclusion because of
I'm just responding to your statement that the colonel came here in February and promised some things,
December,
and here we are
came,
in...
He came in December.
Or December, I'm sorry.
14th.
And here we are in
November.
Almost November.
Because of circumvention of the CEQA process by the CCSD,
that's just a patently false statement.
I don't believe that to be
coastal,
true.
The Coastal Commission, if you bother to look at the tape of the Coastal Commission meeting, you'll actually find Peter Douglas, who was the executive director of the Coastal Commission.
I know who he is.
Actually praising the process that we followed.
Well, it seems to me that the process is not going very well, and one has to wonder, taxpayers' money being spent on a project that is not moving along, our ratepayer money that has been to the millions paid for this. So where really are we after, 2000, 2001? You tell me. And I'll tell you that if you had in 2007 followed some advice that I gave the board at that time, I wrote a letter and said we could be a model community for not only Cambria, for not only this county, this state, this country, but for the world. We could be that model community by doing a lot of things differently. Trust me, we could do it. But if we didn't have that Pacific Ocean out there, what in the heck would you be doing? You'd have to come up with something very different than what you're doing now. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your comments. The next request to speak is from Steve Figler.
I agree with most of what's been said.
You can wrench savings out of the current system that we have and maybe in the aggregate come up with 100 or 200 acre or more feet of water. Then you lift the moratorium and you allow some building to go forward. Then you reach the point where you're maxed out again on the amount of customers you can serve, so you have to impose another moratorium. What do you do when you reach that point? Because you really can't have a moratorium forever. I'm not fear-mongering. I'm not trying to scare people into thinking that we're going to run out of water. I'm simply saying that at certain points along the way, using that system, you're going to be right back in the same kettle of fish we're in now.
Well, you also brought up the fish and game and wildlife mm-hmm. concerns and the scenario of not being able to take water out of the creek because the fish and animals would be adversely affected. Well, I think if this nation, this world, got into that kind of a no more water
situation, that there would be, pardon the expression, a title turn in the laws if we got to that point. At a previous meeting, you or someone else on the board talked about, well, with global warming coming, we've got to prepare for the future, and that a desal plant is preparation for the future. And I did a little study on this, and if that occurs, we will have more El Niños, not less, which means we will have more water than we know what to do with.
I don't recall anybody on any board that I've been associated with here saying that somehow global warming is going to have anything to do with diesel.
Well, you know, you do deny these things. You say you don't recall these things, but these are things that I do recall. And if you would like, I will spend the time to sit down with you and watch the video.
Well, if you want to watch the videos, that's fine.
No, I don't want to watch it. I want to prove to you that you simply deny things that other people that you yourself have said or.
Okay.
Other members of the board.
I don't think it's very material, so go ahead.
Okay. In your own water master plan in 4.8, it states, during the dry months, it has been estimated by CCSD Operations Department that 250,000 gallons per day is required to be percolated into the ground between the well field and ocean in order to maintain an adequate hydraulic mount, which we spoke about earlier today. Assuming a minimum dry weather flow of 650,000 gallons per day out of the wastewater treatment plant, approximately 400,000 gallons per day of recycled water could conceivably be available. Now, put that together with the widespread belief, and probably a fact, that the pipes in this town were originally put in with inferior material, and they are breaking down. They are crumbling. I've heard that from many, many people, even a CCSD employee. If that's the case, what we're doing is potentially desalinating water and piping it through pipes that are losing. When we replace those pipes, and we should replace those pipes, and part of the work of the CCSD should be dealing with the current infrastructure problem, particularly if it's losing water, replace those pipes, and at the very same time, while you're in there, at no cost other than the pipe itself, put a put purple pipe along with it, as currently the CCSD has done down Main Street. That's a way to recapture water that would otherwise
related responses to hydrologic changes in Santa Rosa and San Simeon Creek groundwater basins, San Luis Obispo County, California, and it's report number 98-4061.
Okay.
And I put the page number, I think it's page 61 or somewhere in there.
There you
go. That's fine. I believe that in a town this size, with actually rather limited work that a board has to do considering what has to be done in larger towns, that you could present us with a kind of a forum where there's a dialogue amongst the entire town. We had a what do they call it in New England? A
town hall meeting.
Yeah, a town hall meeting a couple of years ago on the park. And that was a wonderful meeting where there was give and take where many people came, not just the few people who will show up to these interminable board meetings. And that's what's needed, where we can have the give and take. And what I would want to know in particular is, how does that 17% to 26% translate to the amount of units that I use or people in their houses use between the use between the winter and the summer? Because I believe you can assume that the summer usage of units, the increase in units in the summertime, is primarily, if not exclusively, going to be used out of the house. And this is what we pay on. And
Director D'Amico.
I just want to, this apparently newest return to, it's like time zone, recycle water. Realize that recycled water, which is used for outdoor irrigation, is a non-starter in your water supply capability. Because in the event that we have a drought, which we've had, you had a surcharge 2007, you stop that automatically. We can edict that immediately, say there will be no more outside watering.
That's right.
It still does, so it does nothing to increase your water supply. It gives you no more storage. It gives you no more drinking water. And the fact is, the reality is, and it's not fear-mongering, it happens to be the science of talk to your Dr. Brunel. If you really look at it right now, it's called back-of-the-envelope thinking. Right now we have, 3,200 residences and 3,700 residences. In 2007, we had a dry year. Right? Was that the one? We went into it. And I'm the first one. You've seen me. I fight against these surcharges. Just wait. It'll rain again. The worst case scenario, which is actually a good engineering scenario, is you should be designing for a 2-year back-to-back drought. The point is that right now we are on a knife edge for the people that are here today, for the community that we have today. Probably actually 2007, the community we have prior to building the newest motel, prior to building at least, I know, 10 houses that have been built since I've been here.
That's right.
So we have had more houses. So the reality is that we have enough water for the people that are here if we don't have a back-to-back year drought, which, interestingly enough, and Tammy knows that the WEAC committee, the Water Emergency Action Committee, and Amanda's the scribe and active supporter of what's going on there, was put together to look at what happens when that double year drought comes from. So let's go back to the point that Chairman Sanders said, President Sanders says earlier. Whether and there are people who don't really care about it, but I do, and I think other people on the board do. We have, and I heard the number again, and I'm not saying it's accurate. We got to stop getting down to the decimal places. But 446. So we got another 600, say roughly 600 people that are looking to build that would love to get a meter tomorrow. Okay, so 600 against the 3,700 we said. Right? It's a 20% growth in water use.
Right.
If you have a back-to-back year drought, recycle water, you can't drink recycled water. You're going to stop the outside watering. You're going to be down to 6 units of 8 units. You're going to have these rationing going in just to keep up with what we have.
Right.
So if you consider, now, then there are people, and I don't know if I respect the issue, but it's their point of view that the heck with anybody who bought a lot. And by the way, statement I think you made, or someone made, I'll just leave it at that, someone made, they knew we were, no, a lot.
It's not that those people were warned about a water shortage. They bought a lot here because they wanted to build a house here. They followed the rules. They got on the water wait list. They pay their taxes. They pay their assessments. I'm sorry, but they're just not greedy, rapacious developers. They're people like you and me.
Of course.
Somebody, depending upon the age of your house, somebody got on the water wait list and eventually got a building permit to build your house.
So if the people who are on the water wait list are greedy, rapacious developers, then the person who built your house is a greedy, rapacious, or was a greedy, rapacious developer. I mean, let's get real here.
But the fact is that a multi-year drought will put a demand, or actually it will cut the ability to serve the people we have here now, probably go into rationing, if not actually shutting down businesses. Therefore, we need at least a 17 or 18% increase in real water supply, probably a 50% to 60% water supply, which means somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 acre feet a year. You're not going to get it by cisterns. And if you, and the thing about cisterns I want to put on the record, go talk to the school. The high school. They spent a fortune, at least $1 million, putting in all these this drainage pipe below ground to have an available water supply so that when it rained, it'll all capture. I mean, they spent money on these polyethylene tube piping systems, and then they can't even water their lawn.
I know the story.
Cisterns don't work if you can't have them the size large enough and you actually have real rain. We get how many inches? 20, 22 inches?
Okay. You've thrown an awful lot of stuff at me.
You've thrown an awful lot of stuff at us.
Much of which I didn't say. Okay? I know the story about the school, the grammar school. The problem there was that Mr. DeClercq wanted too large a pump, and he broke through the system, so there was too much pressure. But that's something else. The central point is that there are alternatives that haven't been sufficiently pursued.
In your opinion.
And even in one of Mr. Gresham's slides, he shows three things that should be pursued, but you're only pursuing desal. The main point I want to leave you with is that while throwing at us the idea of moratoriums, and you can't have a permanent moratorium, and things like that, why are you particularly, Mr. Sanders, courting the Unlock group?
Oh, come on, Mr. Figler. I've gone to every annual Unlock meeting that has been held here in Cambria since I was elected. Well, I'll tell you why.
Rest my case.
I'm sorry, but your statement and your wife's literature try and villainize me. They assassinate my character and so forth. And I think it's just absolutely repulsive. Well, I think you should be ashamed of yourself.
Sir?
I go to the Unlock meetings because those people are going to be spending the big dollars to fix a lot of the infrastructure around here. They have a right to be kept apprised of what's going on. So I go there and I tell them what the latest information is on desal, on water storage, and a range of other issues that involve the Cambria Community Services
that, sir,
District.
Is disingenuous.
And I go to lots of people's houses, and I talk to lots of people about the same issues, people who live here in town. You should be ashamed of yourself. That's enough. The next request to speak is from Jerry McKinnon.
Could I just add something to what
Frank
was...
Sure. Well, Jerry McKinnon's working his way up here. Go ahead.
Frank was talking about the recycling and so on. In 1990, when we had a real drought and everyone was cut right back, the sewer plant was in danger of not having enough water. And, in fact, the danger was that the let's call them manhole covers, for a better term, were ready to pop off because of the strength of the sewage. So that's a real dangerous time. And that's not a time you want to siphon off water for some other purpose. That's reality.
We have that reservoir. What we're going to do is to move the youth center into the vacated library building. You know, the library is going to move across the street. That building is going to sit empty. Move the youth center into the library building. And now we use eminent domain, and we move the Rabobank, which used to be the Mid-State Bank, into its empty old building. Doesn't that make sense? Now we have the Cambria Yacht Club. Now, when they built that building down there for the bank, if you look in the parking lot, you will see a boat ramp out of concrete that goes right down into our estuary, into our Cambria Yacht Club basin. Now what we need to do, what we could do, is build a little boat dock out there so people can bring their kayaks and their pedal boats and launch them. And we would have a recreational site. Do you realize what it would do for the community? Would people, they would quit using Lopez Lake and come on over to Cambria? What it would do to the economy in the area? Now, we have this basin of water. We'll build ourselves a fishing pier out there. And we'll let the Fish and Game stock it with steelhead. Wouldn't that be great? Now, those steelhead will eat all the algae out of the water, and that water will be kept nice and fresh. Now, when the big floods come, well, then, of course, all we need to do is open up the weir gates underneath the bridge, and all that water will drain out, and the little fishies will go downstream, or they might even fish upstream. Matter of fact, if this works well enough, we might have enough water flowing in that creek that the guys in their kayaks can go right on down and sail right on out into the ocean. Now that we have a navigable river, we'll have to have the Coast Guard station up here because they patrol all navigable waters. And so there's nothing but good can come from this. Give it some serious thought. You want a reservoir? Look at all of the fringe benefits. Look at all of the unintended consequences if you will do that. Now, I've spoken my piece publicly. I've been approaching this. I've talked to you guys on a one-to-one basis, and now it's public. Public dissemination. Yeah. Everybody on television will see this, and you will find a reaction from the community that will just clobber your headaches. Thank you.
Are you a...
Very good, Jerry.
Are you a paid spokesman for the Coast Guard, Jerry?
We'll add that as an alternative in the Water Master Plan. Okay, I have no more requests to speak on this item. There's no action by the board required. That takes us to the public comment period.
What about item B?
Oh, I'm sorry, 9B. I'm sorry, Merle. I'm getting ahead of myself.
I'm sorry, President Sanders. I just wanted to let you know that I have all the well production numbers for
I understand. We'll put them on the website for everybody to see.
They are already on the website. I appreciate that. I'd like them included with the minutes with my comments. Thank you.
That's fine. Okay. We have the pleasant task of considering the nomination of Merle Clift as the as a regular member of the Local Agency Formation Commission in San Luis Obispo County. Currently, Director Clift is serving as an alternate member, and because the current special district member is no longer going to be a board member in Templeton any longer and is stepping down, there's a vacancy for the regular member. So the concept here is to consider the nomination of Merle Clift as the regular member filling the special district slot on the San Luis Obispo County Local Agency Formation Commission. Do we dare nominate him? What do you think?
Certainly.
Anybody who would take that job has got to be a little bit crazy.
Well, point of information is I go to all the meetings, but I don't get to vote. So I'm asking you for the
Now you get to vote.
I would get to vote as a regular member.
Right. Okay, is there a motion to nominate Merle Clift as a regular member of the Local Agency Formation Commission?
I'll nominate Merle Clift to be a regular member of the LAFCO Association.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to nominate Merle Clift for a position on the Local Agency Formation Commission Board. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
The public that they don't have an opportunity to speak.
It's good for
and
us.
When
to...
And when I see as many meetings as I have sat through, the number of board, the number of people who take the time to come down and use an opportunity to speak to you is atrocious. You get all this public about, well, the board this and the board that. They're not down here to express themselves. It's just if somebody should be ashamed, it should be the public of Cambria and not utilizing the opportunity to come down and vent their spleens. It's good for you to know how we are, and it's good for us to have the opportunity. Now, next in January, you're going to be electing a new president of the board. And I hope you will consider the balance between the two. 3 inches of 3 inches. Oh, there I go again. Freudian slip. 3 minutes of talking and it's all done versus an opportunity to really express ourselves. So take it in consideration the next time around. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate the compliment. The next request to speak is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. First, I'd like to say, Jerry, you stole my compliment, and now I have to come up with another one somehow, because it was very nice to hear a lot of the everybody had an opportunity, really, to speak their minds for the most part. It has been 8 years, 11 months, 13 days since the moratorium was declared, and slightly over 9 years since the last letters of intent went out. Why do I say this every time? Not just because Mr. Funky Blue is no longer on the board, and not because I want growth or because I own property. I do it because we cannot ignore those who own property that are on the list that want to build. I also do it because I really think that this board needs to reconsider that particular declaration. We need to look at the facts again, and it should be examined. And if it's warranted, it should be redeclared, because we are stretching the limit of what I think probably most judges would consider to be what would be acceptable length of a moratorium. As President Sanders said, we can't have a permanent moratorium. So at what point does it start becoming another problem? I'd also like to address something to make sure that it's clear. The amount of water that has been produced from the district's own production charts in 95, 677 acre feet, 96, 718, 1997, 785 acre feet, 98, 707. I'm not going to read every single one of them, but there's the only one that's above 800 in the last since 1995, and that is in 2002, and it was 809. And it's very important that people understand. When you said, well, we'll be back in the same kettle of fish if we lift up the moratorium, and then where are we when we run out of water? 74 gallons per capita per day, population of 10,230. That's twice of the number 5250, which is what the capacity of the sewer treatment plant is. Okay, so if
that's 5,250 hookups.
Right, 5,250 hookups.
Not population.
Right.
Okay.
So if you say two people per house,
right,
per connection, that's 10,230.
Right.
So that's outside the 4650. At 74 gallons a day, you're going to use 850 acre feet. Add in 25% additional for commercial, that's 1,062 acre feet, and that is less than the 1230 that is permitted. If we do an in-stream study, we could find we have that, and that we could do that without affecting the steelhead and the other endangered species and still have that habitat. We could find that. We could find something else out. But I just wanted to point out, that's 74 gallons a day. That's 20, more than 20 gallons above what the state of California says is reasonable for indoor use. And if we're in a second year of a drought, nobody should be using any outdoor water. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for your comments. The next request to speak is from Mary Webb.
Yeah, directors, I also appreciate the ability to speak for 3 minutes or more than 3 minutes. I think you've all been really fair about that, and the boards in the past, it was really horrible. So I do appreciate that, too. I wanted to correct, I think, what was stated about what the moratorium, whether it was a moratorium on connections or a moratorium on EDUs, in the Pine Knolls water tank appear letters, including the 38 approved commitments of the October 25, 2001 CCSD board meeting. These outstanding commitments included both residential and commercial development totaling 202.31 EDUs. By that statement, 124 letters does not equal 124 connections does not equal 124 EDUs. They were talking about 124 commitments and 202 EDUs. So by the CCSD adding 136 water connections since the moratorium of 2001, when we only had 110 water connections added, I think we've violated the moratorium already.
Well, you're entitled to do your research, and if you think there's been a violation, you should duly report it.
I'm in contact with the Coastal Commission about that right now, but I think the rest of the board members do need to know that I think we've already violated that moratorium, that the moratorium was on water connections. It was not on EDUs. 136 water connections would equal more than 136 EDUs. It would be the single-family EDU is one EDU per residence. Commercial is more than that, so it's we're way above that.
I will tell you that the Coastal Commission, after the moratorium was declared, considered the Monaco appeal. The Coastal Commission established some ground rules with respect to hookups during the moratorium to work through the pipeline, and what the Coastal Commission dictated is that every new hookup has to demonstrate some water savings elsewhere in the community. The Coastal Commission has been tracking all of this very carefully because every new project is subject to a minor use permit. So they have a way of tracking it, a way of exercising regulatory authority over all of this. So you should do exactly what you're doing. Go to the Coastal Commission, do your research, find out the facts.
Okay. Well, okay. You do know now that the connection limitation of the moratorium was not on EDUs. The 120 or the 110 they were talking about is water connections, right?
You should. Well, I'm not going to. You can go to the Coastal Commission. You can get all the facts. That's exactly what you should do. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, I have no more requests to speak. You'll all notice that. We have on the printed agenda adjournment today in honor of Roger Lyon, who tragically was killed in an airplane accident a couple of weeks ago. Roger was well known to many people in town. He served formerly as the general counsel for the Cambria Community Services District. He was instrumental in putting together the conservation easement for the Hearst Ranch. He was instrumental in putting together not only the original conservation easement for the Estero Bay bluffs, but also acquiring those bluffs and getting everything into the hands of state parks. He was an ardent conservationist, and he will be missed. He was a friend of mine and a friend to many of us here in town. So this meeting is adjourned in memory. Oh, I'm sorry, Merle.
And there's a memorial tomorrow morning at Cayucas Pier.
That's right, 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
That's right. Anybody interested in attending is encouraged to go. Roger was a great guy.
Excuse me. I thought there was perhaps another one at on the ranch. They said at the barn.
I think there's going to be two or three.
Okay. All right.
That
was the barn. Oh, okay. Well, okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So we are adjourned to closed session in memory of Roger Lyon.